This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
A fantastic day to you, whenever it is that you might be listening to this fantastic Weekend Confirmed podcast. I'm, of course, very excited because in about 36 hours, I'll be getting on a plane to go on vacation.
Boat. You'll be on a boat.
On a boat!
Well, I get on a plane to then get on a boat. Yeah, the boat part is not until a little later, but yeah.
On a plane doesn't sound as good.
You have to make the obligatory Instagram with, I'm on a boat, once you see the boat.
Okay. Are you bringing your flippy floppies?
Of course I'm taking my flippy floppies. Right, I'm going to hold them up and write them. I'm going to take my flippy floppies. And T-Pain.
You're going to bring T-Pain as well?
Well, you know, it was, you know, you or T-Pain.
Yeah, I always lose out to T-Pain.
I'm sorry.
Story of my life.
You'll be stuck here. That's Jeff Cannata right there, folks.
Hey, everybody.
He will be here next week, we think.
I will.
After he goes to Houston, Texas to check out NASA.
Yeah, that's not yet been revealed to the people, but yeah, that's...
Oh, is that not to be revealed?
Well, it isn't. You just revealed it.
I don't just think revealed it's a secret, it.
But I just found out that I'm going
I'm
going
to be on a boat. You're going to be an astronaut.
Dude, what? I can't say what they're letting me do.
But it's awesome.
But it's fucking amazing. I'm really excited about
Wait,
it.
Wait, do you get
I'm
to like go
nerd.
In one of those airplanes up
you can't
in the sky?
Say
no, it's not, zero gravity?
It's not that thing. It's like stuff that they're not using yet that they're going to show us for the... not. It's
mean,
not for the first time. It's like on their website
awesome.
And stuff.
You mean
but,
it's classified?
No. Oh. Anyway, but that's a different show.
And that would be Andrea Renee here.
Hello.
No longer of the Machinima
Empire. We don't speak
Emperor.
Of that.
No,
speak
okay,
of
no longer of that empire. Now the host of the...
It rhymes with enema, though. You can't say it. But it rhymes with enema.
Now the hope and host of Escapist News Now.
That's correct. Yes, it's my new show. It's my daily news show on The Escapist. You can find it primarily on The Escapist YouTube channel, but there will also be some episodes on The Escapist magazine website as well.
So there you go. Congratulations on a awesome association there. Escapist is a great, great platform.
Thank you. Yeah, no, everyone over there is really fantastic. I'm really excited to be part of the team there.
Excellent. And then finally, we have the debut of the Heat Magnet.
Okay. The Heat Magnet is in the house. The
first timer.
Don't ask how Heat Magnet got started.
But, first
yeah,
timer.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here for my very first podcast and hopefully not my last. So
that is Ozzy of the Shaq News and Gamefly team. He does awesome work with us. You probably read his reviews on the site. He does a number of other things behind the scenes, including orchestrating Game of the Day stuff. He's into mobile. He just recently did a couple of mobile reviews for us, including Injustice Gods Among Us for iOS, which I assume we'll dig into sometime during the
flow
here. Did you? I did too. Yeah. So we got that on decks.
I tried to play it. I played it at GDC,
and
then
swiping finger broke.
No, you can't install it on first generation iPads.
Uh-huh. No, you cannot.
Which is really stupid.
That's because why would you install it on something that's garbage?
Oh,
Apple
snap.
Wants you to throw their first generation things in the garbage. This is disposable devices, everyone.
Well, the thing that really pissed me off about it was when I tried to install it, it says this app requires a gyroscope, but there's nothing about the gameplay that requires a gyroscope.
No, there's no gyroscope. There's a multi-tap, which I assume that's why it's not working on first generation, but I didn't see...
First gen has multi-tap.
Does it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All iOS devices have multi-tap.
It's purely a processor-related thing. Look, you're on Unreal Engine 3.
You.
Hey-o.
Oh, which, by the way, Garnet,
yes.
Literally today...
You bought one.
I already had a Wii U, but I bought Monster Hunter.
Oh, awesome.
Ultimate. So,
dude,
it's happening.
Awesome.
I know
awesome.
You're going on vacation
awesome.
Right now.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
When you get back, it's
We're
happening.
In. Fantastic.
Dan is in, I'm in, I'm going to play with some of the Gamers with Jobs guys that are playing, and I want to kind of, I'm trying to hook up with the Mohun Bros
nice.
Guys, the Super Brothers and all those dudes are...
I think you're going to really like it. I think that we will enjoy playing that game together.
I played about an hour of it today. I literally bought it today. It's going to be my next investing game. So it's happening. You and me in Monster Hunter.
Sweet.
Happening. Investing in it.
Sweet.
Okay.
That was actually, so we actually, since, you know, we can we're going to talk about a bunch of games today. We've got that. What else do we have on here? I played some Company of Heroes 2 beta. We're going to talk about some Battle Block Theater, some Guacamelee. There's some Gears of War Judgment that's been played, some Luigi's Mansion, which my friend Vic Lucas of the Electric Playground said was his favorite game of last month. And yes, that did include BioShock Infinite. So
he is also my friend and former employer.
Very high praise. Well, you weren't speaking. Our friend of the show.
Yes.
How about that? Friend of the show along with, you know, the rest of the crew there. So we got lots to talk about. Well, we could go to Monster Hunter 3.
We also have to talk about the greatest video game trailer of all time.
Well, we're definitely talking about that. I just want to talk about that, period. I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Is it amazing? It's going to be amazing. All right, so but we'll go to Monster Hunter just
neon.
For a minute. Since we're going back to Monster Hunter later, I'll just, like, a couple of things about Monster Hunter. Have you been, like, doing any research or background to, like, get yourself prepped up for this?
Yes, I've gone to the University of Dan Trachtenberg, which is basically him sending me YouTube links to watch. And
that's a good start.
I'm preparing myself, trying to decide which of the 12 weapons to initially start with. Learning.
What are
about,
you leaning towards?
Well, Sword and Shield is sort of the noob weapon just because it's like the most instant response time.
Yep.
And Dual Swords also looks pretty cool. But I kind of want to experiment with some ranged stuff. Maybe bow or what is it? Light crossbow or something like that?
Bowgun?
Is that what it is? Light bowgun?
Yeah,
it's heavy bowgun.
Light and heavy.
I'm also really drawn to the hammer.
Okay, the hammer is
because
actually...
Because I want to say, stop. Hammer time.
Hammer is awesome, especially in group play because of the knockdown
stun,
you get with it and
yeah,
the stun. So
right.
Actually, you'd be really beneficial. And I think one of the fun things about the game is that you have to get your head around the idea that it's not like a traditional role playing game and that you don't level up.
Right.
There's not like this magical progression. Literally, the story, if you're putting quotes around it, the story that you get at the beginning of the game from the village chief, that's the whole thing,
right?
But it's not the whole thing. It doesn't matter anyway.
Anything, yeah,
because really it's what it's about is you settling into this life of a hunter, and
yeah,
there's so many pieces of that really work and bring together this whole like just going out and hunting experience. It's really cool, I think. And the other thing is like the social part of it, you'll really jam on it.
Yeah, it seems like the distilled version of an MMO. it's just like a boss fight for a half an hour to an hour. That's all you're doing. Can you survive it? And then if you do, you get red stuff that you get to
yeah,
make out of it. And there's no level. I mean, although there's hunter rank, right, which is your sort of
which you gain by
bragging rights.
Right. Which is, yeah. So look, though it doesn't have the greatest progression in the world, doing single player in Muga Village is still a good idea. Like, you'll get a bunch of the concepts down. You'll understand like how all the different crafting pieces work together. You'll have time to like fiddle around with all the different weapons you want to. I would actually recommend that you like steer away from ranged at first.
What are you playing?
I did Sword and Board first,
yeah,
because it's like just it was easy to get right back into, but then Greatsword. Greatsword's really fun. Greatsword has cool charge up, and like there's just something. I mean, if you've seen Monster Hunter before, the Greatswords in the game are ridiculous.
Yeah, they're really fun, and I played a bunch of the demo just before. I was like, am I going to buy this? Am I going to like it? I don't know. Because I played the Wii version way back and kind of didn't get into it. Mostly because of my aversion to.
Well, then you'll recognize it.
Sub,
it's the same game,
high
right?
Def graphics.
You're gonna recognize it. It's
oh,
the
yeah,
same game.
Yes.
So you can go through that stuff more quickly, and
right,
then you know go down on the dock, hit multiplayer, and I think man, you're like,
I'm excited, and I'm excited to play with my friend. That the real draw is having a group of people that we you know, go out and adventure together and try
yeah,
to knock down these big
monsters. So the thing is that it fits into this weird space that I think is very unique to Monster Hunter in that it doesn't have another game formula that really it maps to one-to-one. You want
right,
to. I mean, you want to say, oh, it looks like a role-playing game. Oh, I've done action role-playing games. But the reality of it, the way you go and play it is so different because you're like just going out and like hunting with your friends, and it really does...
There's a lot of gathering as well.
There's a lot of gathering, but it sort of captures
crafting.
It in a way captures this idea of you and some friends going to like Yosemite for a few weekends if Jurassic Park was there and you had weapons.
Yeah.
And you're just kind of hanging out and you go out on some hunts and you collect some mushrooms and there's a dude back at the village who'll like make weapons for you and stuff.
That's a good analogy because half the time when I'm fighting it, I say, I must go faster.
And when you get back into it, you know, I like the way one of our listeners put it. I never know how to pronounce his name. It's Rivensantle, R-V, R-V-A-N-C-E-T-A-L. Anyway, just posted they'd fallen back into the black hole, and that hole is called Monster Hunter. And what he likes about it is that it like encloses you and or three other people and a gigantic monster in a confined space and lets you battle and make sure that the experience is perfect at the cost of everything else. And that's really what's cool about it, is that when you get into these hunts, it really is like there's one thing that's going to be beautiful and perfect about it, and it's that hunt experience is going to be perfect. It's not weighted down by the need for character progression or incorporating skills or anything else other than that hunt has to be perfect, and it does a really good job of that.
Let me ask you this question.
Yes.
Because Dan was like, you know, you should really buy a Wii U Pro controller, and I was like, okay, I bought it. So I've been playing with the Wii U Pro controller just in the couple of hours that I've spent so far. Are you playing with the Wii U gamepad?
Yep.
Are you playing? Yeah.
I'm literally.
Do you like it? Do you like the added touch screen? Because you can like do.
The only thing that I like about it,
quick and stuff like
you
that.
What I like about it is I uncluttered my main screen, because one of the things they did that is cool is they give you full customization of the UI elements.
Right.
And you can pull down stuff onto the gamepad pad. So I pulled my map down to there, and you can tap on the map, and it taps between a close-up of the... So each of the little areas in Monster Hunter are contained spaces that have, like, numbers on them. So if you're looking at a map, there's, like, little nodes, I guess, that
yeah,
are, like, the...
That's a good word for it.
You know, like, the places that things will take place. And you can tap on it, and it, like, gives you a zoom view of it, or you tap back out, and it gives you the view of the whole map. And I like having that down there where it's not up on my main screen. So it's uncluttered my screen a lot. Because the game's fun to watch. I mean... Mm-hmm. It is a super cool, because once you learn the hunting thing, then you figure out like, wow, battles in this game are not like run up and ick it.
No,
they're all about, they're all about like learning how to use your weapons, especially like getting in there with team and having other people who can support you, someone to do a stun, someone else to do, you know, different poison tipped or effects tipped arrows so that you can like apply different like debuffs to your monster. Anyway, you get all of those things like an MMO.
And you're learning the pattern of that specific monster.
And the battles are great. So, no, I'm using the pad. Pad works great. I actually bought, it's funny, I bought a Wii Generation Pro controller, which I still have, which also works with this. And I busted out and played with it for a little while, and I was like, I'm going to go back to the pad.
The classic controller, you mean?
Yeah, the classic that went with
the
Wii.
Wasn't that called the classic controller?
The Wiimote is what they're called.
There was a
there was a classic that plugged into the Wiimote.
There was a classic controller, a classic controller Pro, and then there's the Wii U Pro controller. Mm.
So I have the classic Pro, I guess, which is the one that plugs into the Wiimote, because that gives it its remote capabilities or some nonsense.
It's the one that's slightly bigger, I think, than the old one.
The Pro controller is actually quite nice.
Oh, yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, it fits great in my hand, and it feels good. And, I mean, it's very similar to a 360 controller or, you know.
But you know what? This game, because you're not... The focus of the game isn't inputting mad combos as fast as possible or you know, it's being practiced in the first place. The gamepad works perfect for it.
And I really do. Have you played online yet?
I haven't. No, I've just been playing single player.
I'm excited. We have to do that when you get back from your vacation.
Yeah, Billy wants to as well.
Yeah, good. Because I'm curious to see how well the microphone and the gamepad works and all that stuff. So, I mean, that's really why I bought it. It's like, hey, my friends are getting into it. I want to get into it with my friends. So,
because it's fun.
Let's be friends.
Let's be friends.
Oh,
but first,
so
you got to go on a boat.
Yeah, well, the vacation, well worth it. I'm into it. You know, I was watching earlier, there's a story about, of course, the Deal With It guy and how I don't even know his name.
Adam Orth is his name.
Who's now lost his job either by resignation or forced out or however that went down. And there was a story on Edge Online that was pretty crazy. It was one of these stories about how NeoGAF pushes a Microsoft exec out the door.
No way.
And I'm not even going down that road. But what was cool about it was that this story, in it they referenced Dennis Dyack's meltdown in 2008 on One Up Yours.
Aww.
I don't know if any of you guys remember that.
Oh, I remember it.
It's way before my time.
But not only did they mention
Ozzy
that.
Ozzy was four.
They linked it, and it was really cool because I went back, and lo and behold, I didn't think these worked anymore, but on the show page that, and Phil Kohler had written the story, on the show page, the old game videos pre-show video was still there, and it worked.
Oh, that's funny.
But so it was really bizarre to like look back into like 2008 of like me and John and Phil and Shane and Andrew all sitting around in the studio there at the Ziff office, and it was a really weird step back down.
What's Dyack doing now?
I don't know, defending himself against lawsuits in Canada, probably. I mean, didn't he face some suits based off of the tax breaks and economic
stuff? He's a smart guy who made interesting games. I really enjoyed Too Human, honestly. If you don't look at it through the lens of what it could have been, if you just look at it through it being sort of a fun button masher loot game, I enjoyed it.
It was a fun button-mashing loot game.
Yeah.
It certainly didn't live up to the aspirations that were sold to everybody.
Absolutely not. And I think that that's a shame. But I remember Ellis and I played it for hours one night and just had so much fun playing online together. And that like slide attack combo system.
Yeah, that was definitely cool.
That was really interesting.
The slide attack combo thing was pretty fun. You're right.
I'm surprised nobody ripped that off because it was interesting.
They were probably all afraid to.
Yeah.
But it was fun to do.
I mean, the game
little...
was a mess in a lot of other ways, but there was a core to it that was really fun.
Well, there's another generation of consoles coming. Maybe they're working on the second of the three games.
Well, they promised.
Yeah, I know. The whole trilogy's coming.
Or there's a Kickstarter coming.
Oh, God. Don't even. Hey, even Richard Garriott can get $2 million on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Any jackass can get money on Kickstarter.
Hey, I didn't
it turns out.
People grew up on Ultima. People love those games.
I know. Like, how far do you go down?
Ultima is my favorite game. Ultima 7 is my favorite game of all time. Yeah. So
that's a lot of jack for Richard Garriott to go and play around with again. I'm trying not to be too judgmental, but it just seems like that's a lot of hopes.
I feel like any comment I make is stupid because I'm obviously just had my own Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But I feel like if people are excited about it and they want to pay for it. The only problem that I come into is when, you know, nothing comes of a Kickstarter, which is not good. Or, you know,
Kickstarter has become such a weird thing to me because it has become such a, I feel like a good bit of the, so you did yours successfully, so don't take this the wrong way, but I feel like a good bit of like the purity of it has kind of been lost. And so now you have either wildly successful Kickstarters or all the rest. Like, there's this one that I think is really cool. So there's this program called EJ, and they did a couple of PS2 versions of this. But basically, it's this software that's a music sequencer that's pretty easy to use where you can drag and drop tracks into your timelines and literally make music. But it's not nearly as challenging to get your head around as, like, a Reason. So, I mean, Reason is high-end stuff. But it's really quite capable. It's very fun to use. It's very, like, easy to get into. There was a PS2 version, like I said, that's very successful. And these guys want to come back now and do EJ for iPad. And it looks really cool. And they're looking to raise, like, £150,000. They're in Great Britain. I mean, admittedly, that's a fair chunk of change. I think they said that they're bringing £150,000 to the table, and they can't get going at all. I mean, they have a week left, or maybe 10 days, and they have like £10,000.
But that's not. I mean, you're sort of laying that at the feet of Kickstarter or the idea of crowdsourcing. And
I'm not laying it at anybody's feet. I'm saying I don't get it.
There's certain things that Richard Garriott can get. Yeah, because Richard Garriott sort of has a pedigree and people trust him. And I think
these guys made six of these EJ products. They were all really successful in their day. It's been a while since there was one. And I guess that sort of ran its course. And so now they're like, hey, now there's a new device and this would be a really cool platform for what we do. It would be really great if we could do it. We have this much we can bring to the table. But there's, like, no support for it.
Maybe it's because they have a lot more competition now than their product had when it originally came out.
There's no competition for it.
No? I mean, no. I'm not familiar with that scene, so I don't know what kind of software is available for that type of program.
I mean, they're sequencing stuff if you want to get hardcore about it. But what's cool about this was back, you know, 7-8 years ago, it took the idea of building your own music tracks and made it almost game-like. So it was very fun to fool around with. And you saw lots of people, like, doing that. And they built a good community then. It's just, and it's not, I mean, that's a case example. There are many other examples of failed to lift off Kickstarters.
Yeah, like look at Robotoki's Kickstarter for their first game, right? Like their little side-scroller game with the guy with the character Dash. I can't remember what it was called. Do you guys remember what it was? Like they failed to meet their goal too. And that was Robert Bowling, you know, a really well-known name in games.
Part of that, I think, also speaks to marketing. Like you've got to get awareness for the thing out there, whether it be on a gaming site or on Twitter or something. Because
I guess maybe that's what's starting to bother me is it's becoming marketing driven.
Because I don't think anybody's heard about the EJ Kickstarter until right now, quite frankly. And whereas someone like Richard Garriott has people out there, he has followers who...
You're right, he does have a built-in crowd, but these guys, I thought, had a built-in crowd. I mean, maybe I'm just wrong at what their crowd was.
Well, I don't understand why you would have a problem with it being...
Again, I didn't say I had a problem.
You said, I guess that's what I have a problem with, is that it's become marketing driven.
Oh, I was saying, yeah, I mean, as far as like Kickstarter in general.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is, I mean, it is literally a one-to-one relationship between the creator of the thing and the person giving money to the thing. So, I mean, that is a messaging question. It's can I give you a message that is something that you find valuable enough to donate your money to?
Right.
And again, I'm going to sound like a jackass talking about this because I just went through it. But
well, what do you think was the secret to yours being so successful?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you this. And I'm not being falsely modest. I had no idea that people would respond like they did. And I was so overwhelmed, and it took me completely by surprise, to the point where I think I was really unprepared to manage the Kickstarter to a certain extent. And I think that it could have been a much more interesting, much more fun campaign all the way through if I had been more prepared, but I really thought we were going to be fighting to make our goal right to the end, and that's not how it turned out. I'll preface all of this again by saying how grateful I am to anybody that's listening to this that contributed it. It's really exciting what we're going to be able to make with it. But I think this isn't commenting on anybody else's Kickstarter, but I just tried to be as honest as I could possibly be with the people who are viewing my video. I said, I don't know if you want this. Tell me if you want it. Because I honestly didn't know. And it sounds stupid to say it now, but there were people who were telling me, like, just go to Kickstarter. And I was like, I'm so scared of that idea. I don't even know if it's going to work. I think it takes sort of coming to your audience honestly and presenting something that people are excited about. And
yeah.
No, you are exactly right. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head by saying you have to really kind of put yourself out there and be honest with the people that you're asking money from and saying, this is what I plan to do. Now it's up to you to decide if you want to participate or not. But right. I'm not giving you this false marketing campaign about all these promises. You're like, this
well,
is
hold
what
on
I
a
want,
second.
You know?
I think that the thing is, people should not think about Kickstarter. I think some of the misapprehension about Kickstarter comes from people treating it like a store. It's not a store. You're not shopping around Kickstarter and buying the Pebble Watch and buying this and buying the Oculus Rift and buying that. It's not about buying things. At least it shouldn't be. It's about donating your money to support a cause. Yes, they're going to hopefully award you with these things at the end of them, and you know you're investing in investing is the wrong word too, because you're not investing.
You don't get a return on it.
Donating your money to see a project to its end, and at the end of that project, you're hoping to get sometimes a product that.
All right, so let's pull it back to games. Yeah. Let's pull it back to games, since we talk about games. We're not really like going to be like some Kickstarter podcast.
But we can relate to the Ouya thing.
We can relate to the Ouya thing, and then you know,
a lot of people. Are
I think it's just getting
that.
Really hard. Also, to the amount of volume of conversations that come out of the internet make it really hard to always read what people are really after. So, case in point is that you know Capcom did Darkstalkers, which had been supposed like they thought. Christian Svensson, their North American vice president of he basically runs the creative side for them, thought, hey, this is going to be great for us. People have been clamoring for Darksiders. They've been wanting Darksiders super bad. Every time we talk about doing a new Darksiders, people go batshit crazy.
Wait, are you Darksiders or Darkstalkers?
Darkstalkers. Sorry.
Okay, sorry. I got confused.
They're suckers.
Right, people have been super hot for Darkstalkers. We're going to do Darkstalkers. It's going to be a big deal. They go and do the HD port treatment, which they've done, obviously, for a number of games. Most recent, and you could argue that the mishandling of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which they did not do a particularly good job on, sort of soured the market a little bit. But there was, they thought, a lot of hype for Darkstalkers. And now, you know, right on, you just told Capcom Unity blog earlier this week, you know, it's been a disappointment for us. We're going to try some promotions. But, you know, we really obviously grossly overestimated the amount of excitement and enthusiasm that was out there, despite the fact that a lot of people had been out there saying, hey, we really want Darkstalkers. We really want Darkstalkers.
I think they wanted new Darkstalkers.
Well, that's, you know, you could go back to the Snakes on a Plane example as well, where, you know, this predates Kickstarter, but it was the idea of, well, based on the internet, this is going to be like a $200 million movie. Oh, my God. The internet is going nuts for Snakes on a Plane. It's everywhere. Everybody wants Snakes on a Plane. And then all of a sudden, it comes out and it tanks because a very vocal minority, you know, made it, it was, is disproportionate to what it takes to make a successful film. So that I think that's what the cool thing about Kickstarter is. It's a direct barometer of what people are willing to put their money towards. And if people say on the internet, it's super, you know, one of my favorite books, one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite books is words are wind. Too often that's the case, that words are just wind, and what people actually put their money towards, you can really see on Kickstarter, and it's exciting when somebody's like, you know what? I want a Veronica Mars movie so bad that I'm willing to give money toward it.
Yeah.
Or I want a new Richard Garriott game so bad I want to put money toward it. That's – I think that is an exciting time to be in. It's – the preponderance of people using it, I don't know if we're going to be able to keep this pace up, but I think it's really cool.
I'm eager to see the payoff to some of the earlier big projects that we hopefully should start seeing come to fruition in game space in the next 6 to 12 months.
That's why I brought up Ouya, because
this summer.
That sort of early reviews of the Ouya from people that backed it have been sort of negative. And then the Ouya people saying, well, we didn't mean for you guys to review it. These aren't review units. These are just units that we gave because you backed us. These aren't representative of the final thing. And it's like, well, that's a little.
So that's a tech product. I think it's going to be tough. Different. You know, hopefully we'll see Shadowrun this summer. And I think people are going to be really – I think that's going to be a really, really cool, hopefully very, very cool example of what can be the payoff of this.
Because
the Shadowrun coming back – was the early poster – well, there is the early poster childs for like, you know what's awesome about Kickstarter is when publishers and financiers won't put money behind something because it doesn't resonate with them.
Yeah.
When someone can go prove there's an audience, which there obviously was for Shadowrun, we can still get her done.
Yeah.
So I just said get her done. That's
you did.
Really awful.
Well, I thought the sleeveless shirt was a bit much too. You went for the whole thing. You went for the whole look and everything. It's good.
All right. On that note, we'll take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we got a lot more games to talk about. Don't go anywhere. Weekend confirmed. We'll be right back.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to Gamefly.com/WeekendConfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's GAMEFLY.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right. I really didn't intend to get quite so sidetracked onto that, but I mean, look, that's the show. It's conversations. And I am just sort of fascinated by the way this stuff all works, especially, you know, now that I specifically am like, you know, making games and looking at games and thinking about what next projects I want to get into. It's just really fascinating to me how things go up and down. And I get that, like, Richard Garriott is a name and people are really behind it, but then I see like he raised $2 million. I'm like, $2 million, holy moly, that's a lot of money for, you know, people to come back and say, hey, we know the last few things didn't work out, but we trust you. People love to trust people too.
And also I think that is the way I'm thinking about it with my own, honestly, is you get one faith try.
Okay.
After that, you know, it's like it'll all sort of sift out, and people on Kickstarter that don't deliver on their promises, the audience, it'll be self-correcting. You know what I mean?
All right. So what have you guys been playing? Tell me a story about a game they've been playing they liked.
Well, I have been playing 4-player co-op with some friends in Gears of War Judgment.
Yeah, not me, after you said you were going to, like, oh, let's play.
Whatever. You never sent me a request either, so whatever. That was my really witty response.
4-player co-op is the way to go in that game,
yeah,
because the AI
exactly.
is not good.
I started playing the game by myself. I played the first, like chapter or whatever alone, and I got, like, as a big fan of Gears, I got pretty bored with it playing by myself. I really just didn't like the way that the level design was set up. It really favors a co-op experience because it really is modeled after Horde. It's like you go through the levels and then they kind of stop you in this open area, and then it's like a mini Horde for like two waves, and then you move on to the next area, and then they stop you again, and then you have to deal with a couple more waves, which is fun when you're with a group and you're playing on hardcore or a really like scaled up difficulty, but on the lower level difficulties and by yourself,
I like the idea of a mini horde. It's like, do we have enough guys here to be a horde?
We're a mini horde.
It's more of a gathering, really.
Well, I don't mean it like that. When I say mini, I mean like horde is 50 waves. Like, I mean, when I say mini, I mean it's like two or three waves. So it's like short and fast, and like you can move turrets around, which I kind of like, and it's cool. They have some new weapons that are fun to try out. I had a really good time with it. It's really, really challenging.
I have to say, you really don't sound that enthusiastic about it.
Well,
you really don't. I mean, it's just sort of like, I played it. Yeah, it's all right.
Well, I've been told in the comments not to be so enthusiastic about stuff.
Jesus Christ.
Because
I don't see the comments here.
I'm just kidding.
Read the comments.
No, listen. Right, I'm having fun. Do I want to play it every single day? Am I at work going, I can't wait till I get home to play Gears of War Judgment? No.
Not so
that's
much.
That's just the truth. But it is a good, fun experience. But I don't... It's not like I'm clamoring over myself to tell everyone how much I loved it.
Is part of that because Gears of War as a franchise has pretty much run its course?
Yeah, they had a really definite ending in 3, and three was such a great game.
I don't think that's fair to say that this whole series has run its course. I mean,
did you pick up Judgment?
I have not picked up Judgment, but that doesn't mean it necessarily.
Well, but let me ask you, as a gamer who likes those sort of games, why did you not pick up Judgment?
I think it came out in there was like two or three things that came out right in a clump, and one of them was BioShock Infinite.
But know? Gears was out before
that. Yeah, Gears came out first, yeah.
There was something else that came out that week, wasn't there?
God of War.
No, but like SimCity or something. What came out like right
SimCity, by the way, now over a month old.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I got it came out in a clump, and I may have been on vacation that week or something happened. I usually would have.
Yeah, but you know, here's what I'm saying is that like Gears 1, 2, or 3 would have like shot right past. You would not have been giving me those sorts of explanations for why you didn't have it. Be like, fucking Gears of War, man. I've been playing it. It's fucking awesome.
And sure. I think it was positioned as a sort of a Gears side project, you know?
Who do you think positioned it that way?
I think Epic positioned it that way.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about that. I think I talked to Rod Ferguson at E3 last year about, you know, when they debuted the Overrun mode. I mean, everything he said was like, this is a standalone Gears experience. Like, this is a full-fledged Gears game franchise.
I don't mean that it's not a full-fledged standalone game.
You said like a side thing, so...
It's not the main characters. It's side character guy, has his own game. You're telling me that it doesn't feel... There's no big number at the end of it. It doesn't feel like the B project of the Gears. It's not... There was no... I mean, it was. They made a big deal about the game coming out, but it definitely didn't have the same, like, this is the next Gears of War game in the franchise. It was like, yeah, this guy also gets his own game, guys.
It's like Joey is what you're saying.
It's the Joey of games. Oh. It's not even Episodes. It's Joey.
Oh, God.
Episodes, by the way, excellent.
Episodes is excellent.
No, I wouldn't relegate it to Joey. I'm just trying to understand what your perspective is.
It's the Baird of
games. I was never personally like
how you doing.
Yeah, I was never a gigantic fan of Baird in the games. I do wish there was a little bit more of some of the others, but I do like how it's not always about Baird, like, you know, like the section that we just finished last night was Sonya's section where she kind of takes point in this like chapter of the game is from her perspective, like the story of what happened, because, you know, they're like all on trial. And then each of the sequences is like a flashback that they went through to try to explain the judgment that they're about to get. It's interesting. I like it, but I haven't played enough to say I really love it yet. But so far, it's good. It's just not blowing my skirt up.
There was such a feeling of there was such a conclusive feeling to the original Gears trilogy, and I don't feel like anyone's going to get that from Judgment. There's no time like your first.
Or your second or third.
But second and third though still felt like a continuation of first.
Yeah, and it was so satisfying just to see the way that ended. I don't think anyone was clamoring to kind of go back and see Baird's story or anyone.
Well, but to say the franchise is over is a little ridiculous to me. Like, the next time they have a big bombastic next one with Marcus and they do a thing and it's the start of the next trilogy next hardware with brand new Unreal graphics, it's going to be special and amazing and awesome. Everyone's going to love it.
A continuation sounds a lot more exciting. That's why people got so excited about Halo 4, because it felt like a continuation of the story. Where does Master Chief go from there? That sort of thing. And that's not something we're getting from the prequels.
Yeah, this is the ODST of Gears games.
Well, would you say that Ascension fell into that same trap?
Yes.
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah.
I think so, too. I mean, I played like the first like two levels of that game, and there's nothing compelling me to go back to it.
They both of them feel like sort of sidesteps. And again, this is just my impression of the sort of marketing of them. I haven't played either of the games except that at events. I haven't played them, the final versions of either of them. But I didn't run out and purchase them either, like I probably would have with, big sequels in those franchises. So
I think the thing with Gears was that for it to have hit, it would have had to have somehow stamped its own identity out. And it really struggles to do that, because in the single player, it still looks on the surface like Gears, but it looks like Gears without the dudes you want it to be. It's like, here's a Gears game in the Gears world, but it's different Gears. But it's Gears soldiers.
It also feels like...
And then the structure is different, because the single-player campaign, very staccato. It has this sort of missionized... Like we talked about Bulletstorm when we talked about this first time. You know, the People Can Fly brought their approach to the single-player there. And while that's cool, combining that with Gears winds up with something that is as good as neither of the two individual pieces, right?
Right.
And then the multiplayer is... The first thing people think, well, it doesn't have Horde mode. And that's a thing.
That's a huge thing. I mean, Horde is an iconic part of the Gears experience. And not to include it, I think, was a mistake, which is why I think I'm like tending to want to play the campaign with friends and kind of simulate the Horde experience without really simulating it.
And playing with friends is always fun. I mean, you get a four-player, you go back and play Halo 4 again with four players. It's going to be fun.
But I also had a great time playing Halo by myself as well.
You play Borderlands, too. It's going to be fun.
Right.
I mean, I think that's one thing that we've definitely learned is that the in-the-game action of co-op in four-player shooters is really good. What we haven't really gotten as sophisticated with yet is how do you bring players when you don't necessarily have a party of just friends, how do you bring players together and get them playing together and recreating that experience just on the fly? We got to get better. I think we could get a lot better at that piece.
I miss Horde mode too, but Overrun is really good. I really enjoyed Overrun a lot.
Okay. Because of the switching back and forth? Or
The class mechanic, the whole... I'm trying to remember which one's Overrun. Is Overrun the replacement for Horde mode, or is it the same type of thing but with both sides as players? I'm trying to remember what that other mode is called.
Survival and
Overrun. Survival, that's right. What it is. And just playing as a Locust is so much fun, and it's a different kind of multiplayer than Gears, but it's still the same kind of experience.
Yeah, but then at that point, then you are kind of into ODST territory of like, well, I could have just had this as an add-on. Mm-hmm. I guess that's kind of the thing, is that I think for Judgment to have really hit, it needed to do it. It somehow or other had to step outside of what had been the ordained Gears path. But at the same time, I don't think that anyone felt like they could do that, because they're making another Gears, even though it's not Epic. It's, you know, Epic's still behind it, and it's their subsidiary studio. So yeah.
Well, the way to do it, I think, that the template that you could sort of copy crib from a little bit is the Call of Duty Black Ops line versus the Modern Warfare line.
That could have been interesting.
You know what I mean? Where if those really
Gears of War, Black Ops.
Yeah, right. Well, those are really positioned like two equal but parallel running series in the same franchise. And if it just doesn't feel like that was the what they set out to do, was to make this its own standalone sort of branching. It just felt like a side project, you know?
Well, and it's also tough because when you look at the Gears of War franchise, it has like a pretty deep lore to it. And I almost feel like some of the liberties that they're taking in Judgment kind of offset the lore because like they've introduced some new enemies. And I'm like, well, if this happens before the rest of everything happened, then how come we don't ever see those enemies like later on?
It's like they died out.
It's almost like anachronistic in a way that if you're really into the lore, could be troublesome. I mean, it's not
prequels
for me.
Are hard.
Yeah, because I'm not like super deep into the lore of Gears, even though I know a lot of people are. But that to me makes it kind of feel like it's like sticks out a little bit more than it should.
So you're gonna finish this thing in four player co-op?
I hope so. If we can, you know, get all of us together all the time. If you want to play, I'm down to play.
I was looking at it the other day because I was still in this like, you know, weird space of game before my trip, not wanting to dig into anything new, but like looking at stuff I might play. And I saw Gears sitting on the coffee table and I was like, I went to pick it up and I said, you know what? Not really so much. Not really so much. Just
once you're in with people, it's really fun.
I agree. Once you're in with people, it's really fun. But there have been so many other good experiences I've had lately and so many other things I was out there to play that like going in and having another Gears experience, but having it be either a single player staccato experience or a online multiplayer experience that wasn't the Horde mode that I really enjoyed, you know, a year and a half ago. Neither of them were like, okay, I got to go do that. There was more like, there are other things I could go do.
There's nothing about it that has that, oh my God, I have to play it right now, that something like BioShock Infinite has. And
for sure.
And I'm trying to put my finger on what BioShock Infinite does different than Gears, because
how long have you got?
How big a finger do you have?
Because that's probably the prequel that kind of bucks the trend of it. It doesn't feel like it's an unnecessary story.
Are we putting that in the prequel category?
I don't know if that belongs in the prequel category.
It's an otherquel.
An otherquel.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a standalone story that ties to the BioShock world, as it should, because it's titled BioShock.
Altquil?
But I thought it was really interesting that the link that you tweeted with that everything that's wrong with BioShock Infinite,
yeah.
I agreed with so much of what he had to say.
I think it's a poorly titled video.
Oh, it is, absolutely.
It's flame bait, but I thought he was very measured and not at all unfair to it. And I love the game very, very much, but my whole position has been with BioShock Infinite that it feels like a rough draft for a much better game.
We did the spoiler cast last week.
We don't need to.
You want to hear some serious BioShock spoiler and story discussion? We did that for the entire last segment last week. A little controversy over whether or not we did it. It's like, by the way, folks, if I had not let... at least let Jeff do that last week. If we had tried to talk about it all, he would have just been spoiler anyway. So it was just easier to bank all that at the end of the show.
Well, I would have been able to control myself. But it was a much more fun
I don't think so. You were ready to go.
No, those kind of discussions aren't fun when you have to be very vague. It's better to just
And they aren't also aren't fun like 3 months after you finish the game. You're like, you know, I remember loving that part. What part was that?
Yeah, it's like trying to talk about the three Mass Effect endings. Like,
it's got
to
be
4 months
fresh
later
and exciting
when that DLC came out.
When you're passionate about it.
But you know what I also have been having fun with is Battle Block Theater.
Oh, I've been playing that. It's like so. I'm all endorsing. I'm all in on Behemoth.
Oh yeah, well, Behemoth
Those guys
is great. Yeah,
I like how they have a sort of a company wide aesthetic that you can see on all their games, and it's such a unique. Iconic aesthetic. I love it.
It's very like 21st century Monty Python.
Is it?
That's an interesting analogy.
And I'm not the first one to say that by any stretch of the imagination, but with the cutouts and the witticisms in the humor and the dry take on everything, it has that sort of same feel like to it, I think. And, you know, right off the bat, the thing about... So Battle Block Theater, if you haven't checked it out, is the second game from Behemoth?
It's the third game.
Third game from Behemoth. Yeah. Follow-up to Castle Crashers, which seems like it was forever ago. Was it like 4 or 5?
Alien Hominid.
Was even more forever ago.
So this game is a little more... would be traditional, I guess. I mean, it's very much a platformer. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the things that stood out to me right off the bat is if you got accustomed to Castle Crashers where combat was a thing, like, this game, combat is not a thing. It's much more about the platforming action. And yes, you have, like, an attack in the game, but your attack is sort of... It responds great to buttons, and it's not like you have the control on the game is perfect. It's just that it's not so much about attack. Like, in a situation where a level that you're in has an enemy, oftentimes the best way to take on the enemy isn't just to go battle them. It's to figure out how to, like, lure them in a position where you can, like, kick or knock them off of a ledge or into some water or use one of your weapons to, like, blow them up. It's like, it's not go in combat first. It's more of a classic platform, and it, like, nails the it. It's like, to me, like, in an alternate universe where Mario didn't exist, it's games like this that would have that pedigree of being the ultimate example of platformers, because it's just like, it has Jeff's whimsy to it, but it has the control and skill qualities of a great platformer to it, and just tons of replayability. It has a level creations factory in it. You can go create your own.
Yeah, and they're
levels.
Doing fan contests to give to show highlighted levels and things like that, which I think is really great.
How much of it did you play? Did you play any online?
Not yet.
I'm not down with the online so much.
I've heard that it's fun to play with friends, but I've been enjoying it playing it by myself.
I've heard it's easy to troll your friends if you're playing online.
See, that's why it's I haven't done it yet, because like they, even when you, like, they make a joke about it, even Behemoth, like, calls it out, like, hey, you can play friendly play or not. And then they have, like, this montage of you, like, slapping your friends around and things like that. Like, you can kind of do that in, you know, the new Super Mario Brothers. When you're playing co-op, you can, like, toss your friends, like, down chutes and things like that and kill them. To me, that's not co-op. That's not cooperative play.
Cooperative.
That's somebody just being a dick.
It's mischievous. It's mischievous co-op. And the thing about it is that I think the difference is in a game with the Behemoth's sensibilities, like, the mischievous part of it stays fun mischievousness as opposed to malicious mischievousness. And it's like because everybody's just in there having a good time anyway, it's that same sort of thing as Smash Brothers or whatever, right? Like, I don't ever, like... As competitive as I get in, Dead or Alive or Tekken, then playing Smash Brothers, I'm, like, never the same way. It's always just, like, you're just smacking people around and knocking them off ledges, and it's like, a whole different sort of vibe, and I think that playing this thing multiplayer has the same sort of sense to it, but I just didn't find it to be as fun, and I don't know why that is. This game was made for you, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm in love with those.
You start out, and you are on the SS Friendship.
Oh, the perfect named ship.
You're on the SS Friendship, and your friendship gets wrecked, and then you're cast away on an island with malicious cats.
And you have to go
find
all your
friends.
Life.
Yeah.
It's basically your life. It's next week for you.
No cats, though.
Well, you don't know where you're going to land.
Oh, God.
might be at home.
On an island of cats.
I don't really know. You know, it's a very easy game to describe, because that's the whole thing. And the fun of it is how well they string together the different challenges. And the levels, they do very quickly. There's 8 worlds of levels, and they do get pretty serious. And I know that you played some Guacamelee.
That's why I haven't played this game, because I've been playing the crap out of Guacamelee.
And I heard it also gets pretty hardcore.
Oh, yeah. That's old school.
And that's one of the things that's cool about these games that have indie roots, but then, like, get brought up to, like, that tier of, I guess we call it digital distribution games now, is, like, they still, you know, completely hold on to that honest, like, look, this game has mechanics, and you're going to have to learn them to get to the end of the game. And it's going to reward you. But you know what? You're going to have to put some work in and learn the damn game.
Well, we're in this wonderful moment where the people who grew up when they were 5, 6, 7, 8 years old playing the beginnings of video games, all those classic platformers, are of an age now where they are the makers. And so there's a lot of that nostalgia in these games. And Guacamelee certainly has that. And I think it's I like that kind of stuff.
It's sometimes cool that both these came out at the same time, although it's a little bit of a weird, like, face off between XBLA and PSN on a very.
Interesting.
It seems similar to me, although I haven't played Guacamelee. I think
you have to. It's awesome.
And I was thinking it would be a great game for me to take on the vacation, because I understand the crossplay is, like, flawless.
So
in it.
Cool.
Don't you dare take video games on your vacation.
Why?
Because
I know who he's going with.
Video
right?
games.
I do know who he's going
yeah.
with.
So I don't think there's going to be any problems.
What?
Are you both going to bring your Vitas?
Well, we only have one Vita. See, this is the problem. It's like,
are you both going to be fighting over your Vita?
That's possible. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work out. Although she does have the 3DS, and I did buy a DS XL. I bought a couple of DS XL games.
Luigi's Mansion. Sorry, Luigi's Mansion. Also, Monster Hunter.
Well, we got Monster Hunter
For the DS.
Yeah, because I'm only playing on the Wii U, and I'm trying to convince Ariel to play.
Dude, I hear that is awesome. I want to try that too. Or the same house, sitting next to each other, but playing on the DS. Dude, I know we're totally jumping around like crazy, but the Vita implementation of Guacamelee is so rad. You can basically turn it into a Wii U. Because there's a workaround where you can use your Vita as a controller for the PS3 and have the map displayed on the Vita. So it's basically like the Wii U gamepad.
That's what Vita was designed for, I thought. Like when Vita was first announced.
Well, I think it was designed to be a standalone portable system. But yes,
primary, yes, of course. But what I'm saying is Sony made a big deal about this crossplay. Everyone remembers Hideo Kojima's famous transferring talk. You know what I mean?
Well, that's slightly different. What crossplay really is you can play it here, you can play it there, and your save goes between the both, which Guacamelee also does. But this allows you to use your Vita as the controller on your PS3.
Which is awesome.
Which is super cool. And I hope more things do that, especially in the PS4 era. I hope that, and if the Wii U is successful, I hope, you know, that all sort of people design for that implementation.
I think the design of the Vita seems like it's like a much better piece of hardware for that than the Wii U gamepad is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a much more robust, dynamic piece of hardware, but also costs a shit ton more.
Like double, but, right?
But Guacamelee, let's talk a little bit about this game.
So I got a question. Have you seen BattleBlock at all?
I have seen stuff about it, yeah. I haven't played it.
So BattleBlock trades on a couple of quick ideas, because I want to see how they compare across it.
Sure.
BattleBlock, one of the core ideas is that every level that you're in, you have to collect at least 3 gems to open the exit. And there are a variety, and typically they're pretty vertical, and they are constructed of, you can clearly see the blocks, which makes sense because they have the user-generated content system, so they're like breaking things down into modules makes it easy to do that kind of stuff, right? You die if you hit water. There are different transparent and move-through blocks, and there are different obstacle blocks like laser beams and fire and that kind of stuff. And so they combine all of those deals to where you get different places where you have to make increasingly hard double jumps or jumps to places that will blow you up, and then it sort of Miss Explosion Man way where you get blown up and then jump again off of that, or fall through something and have to make a jump to the side. So it's a lot of this
very similar stuff happening in Guacamelee.
Okay, that's what
very
I was wondering.
Similar.
Okay, so that's sort of the take on where BattleBlock comes from.
Yeah, I mean Guacamelee is a classic Metroidvania, 2D platformer where you're going back and forth and you're acquiring new powers that do a dual job of both making you able to do more interesting combat moves, but also open up parts of the world that you weren't able to go to previously. It gets pretty fun, pretty nefarious, very very N+ like. I was reminded of that game in the sense it's a marriage of those old school sort of hardcore game mechanics with a very forgiving new school sensibility of like, if I miss a jump, I respond instantly right back up at the platform where I missed the jump from. So I'm not having to retread the whole level just to get back to that jump that I missed. It's literally like, whoop, you're back right where you leapt from. So
they didn't take the
BattleBlock does that too.
Yeah.
It's a very new school. It's very, the modern games are sort of like, I waste my time retreading this whole level when it's all about acquiring that skill of making that incredibly difficult double jump at the right exact moment. And why make you wait 10 minutes to get back to try it one more time when you're going to probably have to try it a bunch of times before you nail it. And I like that. I'm done with, needing to start the whole level again because I didn't get over the water that one time, or the
exactly. It's really frustrating. That's why I was glad that BioShock had that. If you fell off the edge, they just like blinked you right back to the edge. I was like,
yeah. Phew. But I mean, the glaring fun thing about Guacamelee that I haven't even mentioned yet is the awesome theme, which is this Mexican wrestler, luchador, masked vigilante guy who's fighting in a very Day of the Dead inspired world that is, you know, that is, you just don't see games made with that. I mean, other than Grim Fandango, I guess. You don't really see games made with that aesthetic sense, and it
not
is
so much.
Very fun. In fact, my biggest complaint about the game is that there's no voice acting, because I think it would have been so much fun to have people voice acting the luchadors and the, you know, the under, you could have like Antonio Banderas guys, and you know, it could have been so great.
You could have had Nacho Libre.
Right.
I saw a really cool feature on all of the different memes that are in that game.
Yeah.
Which I'm really excited to check out.
Yeah, it's fun. It really doesn't take itself seriously at all. All the characters' names are hilarious. They, you know, the quests are all ridiculous. Whenever you acquire a new skill or something, it like goes spam, like has this big splash page of like the cool new move you learned, you know, and it's like blah, 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 you know, with all the graphics like
sweet,
sparkling and stuff. It's really cool. And then when you have to fight a boss, it shows it like a like an old school title bout, you know, like you versus them, bah, you know. It's cool. It's so much fun. The music is great. It's very, you know, Spanish and Mexican inspired,
like flamenco
Spanish guitar. Yeah,
pretty cool.
But like with a modern twist. You know, there's some beats with it too. I just wish there was voice acting, because I think it could be so fun. But that whole world, that look, and it's this sort of cutout. It almost looks like, what's that old cartoon that I used to love?
I know what you're talking about. Yes, Mucha Lucha.
No,
not that one.
Anyway, it's like it looks very cartoon, cut out, really right angles, lots of right angles. It's a great looking game, great feeling game. Plays really well, and it gets really challenging. It gets, and there's really fun. Like, wow, that's an impossible thing. How do I even get there? And then once you figure out, oh, you know, you have to, at the very exact right moment, trigger your special thing, which lets you jump in the air and all that
See,
stuff.
See, dude,
so much
of these,
fun.
The beauty of these games for me is that they give me just the right emotional release valve in their style to deal with the difficulty of the game.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't wind up getting worked up. I mean, you guys know me. You know, like, I don't have much frustration tolerance. I don't have much, like, Super Meat Boy doesn't work for me because it, like, the Meat Boy part of it that works for some people doesn't have that same effect on me.
Yeah.
But, like, these two games, but especially Battle Box, as I played it, like, it totally has this effect on me to where even when I'm missing stuff and screwing up and having problems, it's like, I'm not upset. I'm more like just laughing and having a good time with it. And
I call that the Trials HD effect. So I don't know. I should hate Trials HD, but
it's
I don't.
It's just so funny. The ragdoll physics in that game are amazing.
I see Trials. I teeter back and forth because Trials, I can get pretty hardcore.
I should hate that game, but
especially with
don't.
The Ghost
like
Riders.
It.
With the Ghost Riders, I can get pretty damn competitive with that.
Well, there was a section early on in Guacamelee where it's that old thing that we all remember from the 8 and 16-bit era of, you're being chased by something that fills the entire screen and it's destroying the screen, the level as you go, and you have to not let it touch you because it will kill you, but you also have to let it destroy parts of the level so that you can pass it, and you're jumping over things and getting around things, and you have to constantly stay ahead of the thing that's destroying the level behind you. And I must have done that 20 times before I passed it. And it's not that hard. I didn't click through that, oh, I need to roll past these enemies instead of fighting them and yada, yada, yada. But in many other situations, I would have been like, fuck this, I'm done. I'm not doing this 20 times.
Yeah.
I have more important things to do with my evening, like eat.
It's really smart design, and it sounds like they get it as well as the Behemoth does, of just this ability, which is hard to get also, of just being fun and making a fun, lighthearted, funny environment, because we know how hard comedy is in games, and yet both these games seem to nail that whole, like, have a good time experience. They're great.
Yeah.
They're great, fun, good time experiences.
They really are. I'm excited to play Battle Block
Theater.
Theater.
Battle Block Theater. and Guacamelee. And that's the first half of the show, folks. Stick around. When we come back on the other side, we still have lots more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. Weekend Confirmed will return. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. All right, now, if you really want to get ready for something, though, it's coming. Then best trailer of the last ever. Because you just like have to throw hyperbole after this thing. Yes, I'm talking about Blood Dragon, which looks amazing. If you haven't checked this out already, this is the Far Cry 3 expansion pack, but standalone.
Is it? It's like what we used to have back in the glory days.
Yep.
A total conversion mod. Remember those? Remember how rad those were?
Those were the days. I love that. So it was recently shown in San Francisco. Andrew Yun was up there for Shaq. And I just want to, like, some of the stuff that he talked to the creative director, Dan Evans, on the game. And, like, some of the things he said are just hilarious. So first off, if you haven't seen the trailer, then you should go watch it right away. It's done in, like,
best. It's 80s. As if somebody put in a VHS tape.
And it totally.
It's so great.
And like the trailer is like, the apocalypse has had an apocalypse.
And they have like old He-Man style animations.
Oh, it's awesome.
And they even say Michael Biehn as...
That he's in it.
Is Michael, he really in
oh,
it?
Oh, yes, Michael Biehn's in it.
I thought that was just a joke,
no,
but he really is
no, he's
it.
Totally... He oh, is awesome. The voice of Rex Power Colt.
I love that they're doing this.
Rex Power Colt, you know where he teethed, right? I mean, he rose out of... the toxic ashes of the Vietnam War II.
In the future, there's Vietnam War II.
This is the 80s so for brilliant. You folks. The Vietnam War II gave rise to Rex Power Colt, part man, part machine. He's a cyborg, but he's got to kill off the cyborgs.
Right.
So it's just amazing. It's full of like so much awesome. So anyway, he talked to creative director Dan Evans. He said, you know, if you look at what happened after Rambo 3 and RoboCop 3, shit just went haywire. And we tried to encapsulate that. The game's pretty stupid, and that's fine, because we're in the video game business, and it's okay to be stupid sometimes.
I thought it was so great that, like, one of the quotes from, like, the press release was like, you get to save the girl and kill the bad guys. And I was like, that's direct from Total Recall.
Which is awesome. Because
yeah, no, it's one of my favorite movies ever.
It's very Total Recall Terminator, you know, it's the Schwarzeneggerification of Far Cry.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that should make you feel really happy. Oh, look, they got it on the screen here in the studio for us. Complete with the chick doing Buns of Steel workout at the beginning. The thing that should make us really happy about this is that Dan had a 50-page presentation ready to give Ubisoft execs on why they should do this, and they signed off on it on the third page. He didn't even have to use it all.
I got 47 more pages. Do you guys have like an hour and a half?
I know, right?
He's like, it took me two weeks to put this deck
really
together.
I really worked hard on this.
It's okay. You had us at Michael Biehn.
Dean Evans, you're a badass. Like, that gives me actually hope. Here's Ubisoft, you know, big publisher that we have lamented them cranking out Assassin's Creed games, and yet they turn around and daylight this right off the bat.
It's flipping off
right.
After something explodes.
If you haven't seen it,
this
game is, you know, and due deference to Gearbox and 3D Realms, this is what I would have thought is a modern Duke Nukem. Like, this is...
Yeah.
I was a little concerned after I saw him flip off the explosion. I was like, I really hope this doesn't go the route of Duke Nukem, because
it's going that way. It's going that way in the right way, though. It's going that way in
the right
modern,
way's cool.
In a modern take on it, right?
Yeah, and it also, you know, it feels... It doesn't have to shoulder that burden of being its own sort of franchise and everything. It's just this fun. Like, we made this awesome game.
Oh, it's a franchise
game,
now, damn it.
But we made this awesome, you know, they can say, we made this awesome game, Far Cry 3, that's serious and, you know, has real representations of things in it. You know, it's based in a kind of reality. And then we made this fun thing that's like a offshoot of it. I think there should be more Total Conversion mods of popular games. Like, give me the same mechanics, because if you look at that trailer carefully, the bow is in it,
yep.
Stabbing guys in the neck is in it,
I know
dogs are in it, all of it it's I don't know where I'm going with this.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Tomb Raider.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, no, it's Far Cry 3. Andrew played it. So, I mean, the thing of it is that the game is still Far Cry 3.
It's exactly this, it all the same stuff. And it's just a layer of difference, which is what all those, you know,
and you still
TCMs
do the same
were.
Thing. You still do the same thing. So the cyborgs or the robots have camps, and you go and take over the
right.
camps, and you are defeating the robots in those camps. The blood dragons, you go and hunt them. These are, by the way, blood dragons have laser eyes.
Of course they do.
There's also apparently like crazy cybernetic sharks and other like
sure. It's all the stuff that's in Far Cry.
It's all the stuff that's in Far Cry turned into this crazy 80s Terminator Total Recall insanity.
So they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They're giving you they already built a great game.
The game framework is there, right?
Yeah. They're just giving you a layer of wacky on top of it,
and
which
you're
is great.
Right. About it being like this total revamp, because what they said, like what Dean said, is he says, you know, we only had a small team and a quick turn. He says, I think that it helped the process in this case, having to get it done so fast with so few people, because we had to approach it in a B-movie style. Like, fuck, we only have 3 nights to shoot this shit. And, like, you sort of get a sense that sometimes that
the
sense
Harvey
of,
Korman of video game
it's
design.
That urgency of, like, damn, we got to get this shit done. Okay, well, here it is. Boom. Okay, that's it. Yeah, that looks good. Crazy, crazy cyborg middle finger. Awesome. Done. Yeah. Print it.
But these are the kinds of things that you would see a user community come up with. You know,
yeah.
Like we took the framework of this and we built this crazy
like
thing.
Like fanfic, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the old, I keep saying the same thing over and over. It's like those old TCMs. And that's, I loved that.
It is total conversion. It's amazing.
I loved that.
Well, there you go, folks. May 1st. So you don't have to wait. It's done. $15. Downloadable. Standalone. It is like Christmas.
It is.
I feel like Christmas is coming in May. I could not be more excited about this. I am on the hype train.
Well, you know what else is coming in
You're
May?
You're welcome to join me.
Xbox announcement. What segue?
You really want to talk about this?
She really does. She really wants to talk about that.
No, all we right. don't have. We don't have to. I prepared two different things.
After your complaints last week that we did not discuss the always on Xbox enough, we're back.
Well, there was
for more.
There was some things that happened after you guys recorded. The whole, you know, Twitter drama was happening probably either as you were recording or just after, like you guys recorded. So, in case you were under a rock and missed about the Twitter drama, there was a employee from Microsoft Studios named Adam Orth who got into a Twitter debate of sorts. Or encounter, whatever you want to call it, with some people.
A Twitter encounter. That sounds like Twitter something you encounter. Pay for.
Where he was caught saying some things that were probably, you know, could be deemed inappropriate and ultimately led to him resigning from his position about the always on requirement, this rumor. And he had said, you know, we're in it kind of like in an age. I don't understand what all the drama is about. Everything is going to be always on anyway. Hashtag deal with it. And the reason why he kind of got into hot water over this is because there are many areas of the U.S. and of the world.
Hey, I don't live there.
You're right. You don't live there for whatever reasons. But
what an answer. What, I mean, I'm sorry. Like that, the only thing that he did that like completely irritated me is like saying that you don't live there is just so dismissive.
It was. And
by the way, that's what Adam said. He like his post back was like, I wouldn't live there.
Right. Well, and that's what people got upset about saying, right? Like, well, just because you live in a big metropolitan area like Seattle or San Francisco or Los Angeles doesn't mean that millions of people around the world that enjoy Xbox products don't live in those areas that with that kind of broadband connectivity. And they got, you know, a lot of people got really insulted by him saying, well, don't live there then if you have problems with the internet, which is really a stupid thing for him to say. And he backtracked and said he was just joking around and it was all in jest, which is an easy cop-out in my opinion. But I think it would have been better if he had just taken responsibility and said, you know what, I was wrong. That was not the right thing to say. You know, but what it led to was this giant discussion about this always-on requirement and how he was an official employee from Microsoft, essentially confirming that it was going to have it. And then a podcaster who has been previously right about his predictions with Microsoft products came out earlier this week and said the same thing, that this was in the notes, that it was going to be always on. And if your connection dropped for more than 3 minutes, functionality for your Xbox would like turn off or something. So
I think it was like 3 minutes and then off.
3 minutes, yeah. That's the total time your internet could be down before you would lose your...
Obviously, they don't have cable internet there wherever they're testing this thing. Look, this, like we said last week, I think Jeff and I are both kind of like on the same thing of A, it's really speculative and a lot of
Sturm und Drang for prematurely. It's
yeah, and that's number one. And then number two, I still like I a couple of people like took me to task for saying that it would be completely foolhardy and arrogant. Like, yeah, sure, Microsoft's a business, as someone pointed out, and they can do what they want to. You're right, they can do what they want to. And I still maintain that if they made the decision to do this, it would be a gross misjudgment of where the world is. Like my SSS, one of our favorite posters, but he actually asked a question and he said, let me ask this about this always on internet connection idea. Is that future 3 years away or 10? If the answer is three, that's about the time the next gen is going to be taking over. What do you guys think? How far away is that generation?
I mean, I would hope that it's 10 years away, given the state of...
You'd hope that it would be 10 years before we have ubiquitous high-speed connections?
Well, no, maybe I misunderstood. I hope it would be 10 years away before always-on requirements are widespread. So if that's not what he was meaning, if he was meaning...
Well, I think that's what he meant, was like, when? How far are we away from the world of everything being always connected all the time?
I'll admit it's coming faster than I think anyone thought. I mean, Google Fiber's coming to Austin, Texas. I didn't see that announcement coming at all. So
I might be coming to Austin, Texas.
Yeah, me too. but I think a lot of the ubiquitous internet across country, I think it's coming a lot faster than anyone thinks. I just don't know if it's going to be here in time for next
time. Well, just before you get to your point, Jeff, sorry. It's like, just because it's available doesn't mean that it's affordable. There's high-speed broadband access in many major metropolitan areas throughout the United States, but it still costs a lot of money. I mean, just here in Los Angeles to get, you know, like the second tier below the highest tier is like $60 a month. Well, that's a lot of money for a lot of people.
Let me play devil's advocate a little bit and just say this. I mean, everyone get shit on, I know, by people.
2 weeks
like,
in a row.
You're defending the corporation. I just want to let's think this through. A, they have no obligation to provide a product that's affordable.
That's true. Apple doesn't care.
No, I mean, that's not.
Neither
obligation.
Does the Honey Badger.
I have no guaranteed right to be able to play the next Xbox console. You know, if they want to make something that's super expensive, then they have that right to do that. I think it would be. Suicidal business-wise, but they have that right. Okay. Let's think about this. Firstly, people have a very short memory to when the first Xbox came out, and it was like broadband-only people. And everybody was like, holy shit, nobody has that. Everybody's dial-up. And they went, it's broadband-only, sorry. And that was really forward-thinking and pretty awesome. Okay. So that was something that we could all see the benefit from because it ensured a stable connection to games and made for better things. Now, the difference here is that a lot of people view this through the prism of it being DRM. So what I'm asking, just as a thought experiment, instead of getting all our hackles in a bunch, because we all know the DRM argument. We all get it. It's obvious. It doesn't need to be restated. And I agree with it. I'm not arguing against it. But why not, as a thought experiment, say, is there any benefit to Always On? Would we, the consumers, gain anything from a system that was always on? Because I don't think anybody's asking that question and saying, could that be awesome?
Well, so I think that the answer is that there is something to be gained from a system that expects to be connected but doesn't require to be connected. Because I think all of the things that fall under that category of what would be cool about being always on could also be cool about being expected to be on. In other words, the system thinks that in an ordinary state, I'm going to have an internet connection and I can grab demos and I can grab patches and I can get relevant content that goes to whatever you've been playing and do all those things in the background or overnight. But you know what? If there's no connection, I'm perfectly okay with that too.
Okay, well, so let's say that that's the case. What I would like to do is say, what is the coolest, I think the most fun, instead of ranting about, oh, fuck these guys for that, which, you know, I don't disagree with any of that. The more fun conversation, in my opinion, is what in a perfect world, in an ideal world, what would be the coolest functionality from a gamer's perspective that you could get if it was always on or expected to be always on? Like, what is the coolest benefit that we could expect from that? Is it even worth it? I don't know.
I don't know that's going to be worth it. I think the thing that, you know, PlayStation is doing this. And I think one of the things that sounds cool about what PlayStation will do is, based off the games I've been playing, me being able to go home and play demos of games that are upcoming and have them already there and not have to sit the way through the downloaded. I think that would be cool.
Integrating your... I mean, I think the idea of how robust the Xbox Live Friends community is,
mm-hmm.
integrating that on an even deeper level than what we're seeing now... You know, we have you know, Burnout and Need for Speed and the sort of auto logification of a lot of other games. I think there's a layer to even deeper than that that could be really exciting, of a fully integrated online community where, you know, I don't know, my role playing world is peopled by people I know, all that kinds of things. I think there's
doesn't
stuff
need to be always on to do that.
Certainly doesn't. You're right. It can grab that data.
It needs to expect to be on in a majority state. Like,
so
it needs
to say
that my normal state is to be online, but if I'm not online, well, I'm okay with that too.
So is there an application of that that requires always, or that where you could see always on being a benefit to gamers, or is there just no use for it from our end?
I don't think there's any use for it from our end, but here's what
you really don't.
I've been thinking about
this a lot. I think we haven't seen it yet, right? We have yet to. Microsoft, I think that's the case that they have to prove when they do this reveal event, is to prove
well,
to
we're
us.
You
why
wanted to be in
it.
Speculation land. Let's speculate. That's what I want. I mean, like.
Okay. Like, I'm saying that I don't have the imagination to speculate what that thing could be.
You have the imagination to get pissed off.
I didn't say I was pissed off. I'm reporting on the story.
Oh. I thought you were upset.
Well, my speculation is this, that the motivating thing is money. And I floated this idea.
I
floated this idea around on Twitter, but I really feel like what they're gonna, and the reason I'm saying this expects to be on is I think that the machine that the hardware they're building will be expecting, just like the PlayStation 4 is expecting to be online, will expect to be online. I think that the always on rumor would, if there is fire where this smoke is coming from, is that, look, this is a group that's all Microsoft that's already played around with this idea of subsidized console sales. And we know one thing about the American consumer. It's been impossible to get the cell phone world to change. Like the rest of the world, people don't get subsidized cell phones. They buy cell phones and then they buy cell phone service.
Right.
And we've not been able to embrace that. Now T-Mobile is trying to now, but that's a whole other subject for the Engadget podcast. What we'll talk about right here is the way Microsoft is going, which has been like the other direction. And I think that the Xbox experiment that they've done with subsidized 360s, they haven't made a big marketing push behind that because it took them a lot to look. There's a lot of behind the scenes work that has to go into making that work. Just think about it from a transaction side. You know, at the point of sale at, say, your local Best Buy, the computers there have to be tied into Microsoft's computers, and they have to be tied into their e-commerce system. And there's a lot of secure systems that have to talk to one another so that when Jeff goes in and buys his subsidized 360, we also sign him up for Live, and we get his credit card information, and he signs a contract so that he's bound now to, you know, have his Live service for the next 2 years that he's going to have to pay for, which then is subsidizing the price of the 360. Now they've been doing all that for a year. They've got all those pieces in place. And then let's say they launch this box with a subsidized model. Now let's say that they launch this box with a subsidized model. Then you have to be always online, because what they wouldn't want to do is for you, Jeff, to go buy my, let's say that the regular, this is pulling numbers completely out of the sky, but let's say this new box is really going to be expensive for them to make. They want to sell it unsubsidized for $500, but they'll sell it to you subsidized for $250.
Right.
And why would they do that? Yeah, they may not make it all back on just the Live subscription fee, but once they've got you in the Live ecosystem, they know that more than likely, this is the same game that mobile game providers play.
But
they're going to get
not,
an average amount of revenue out of you, and they're going to get their cut off of all that. So,
and I would argue that consumers want that.
Maybe. And the machine needs to be online, and they would have to have the disconnect thing, because what they wouldn't want you to do is for you to go buy that box for $250 and then be able to play it without the Live connection, because you could just default on
sure.
the Live and not keep paying it, and then they'd have to go after
well,
you.
Well, then they're going to have some sort of 3G, 4G, something in there.
It doesn't have to be 3G or 4G.
But here's my position.
Wait, hold on. Why does it need to be – it doesn't need to be wireless technology.
Well,
it just
I mean,
needs to be – always on connected device. The whether it's 3G or 4G doesn't matter. What they are saying is, Jeff, we're going to sell you a Xbox to go with your Live service, and obviously you wouldn't be buying a Live service unless you had the ability to connect to the Live service.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense. And that's a reasonable expectation. But then they still have a normal box to sell at Walmart in middle America or even anywhere else. Like, how about this? How many people have boxes in their homes in different places that just aren't connected? Maybe they don't have Wi-Fi in their house, or maybe they don't want to connect to Wi-Fi. You know, they just want a standalone video game machine. There's no way Microsoft is going to walk away from that market.
I agree.
It's ridiculous.
I agree. And the thing that I keep hearing in all of this reporting, and again, I'm just asking the question and trying to figure out how I feel about it. The thing that I keep seeing in all these stories is everybody going, well, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. We're pissed off that it was happen now, but it's just way too soon. And what I'm saying is, why is it going to happen? Is it going to happen because they want to be data mining? They want to be DRMing and all those sort of nefarious angles? And is there literally no benefit to the consumer from this kind of technology? And if so, why are we sort of all conceding that it's going to happen eventually? You know, like, I want to find out how it can benefit the consumer.
It will. It will absolutely benefit the consumer.
How?
People are just having difficulty seeing that right now because it's changed.
How
specifically?
Yeah, how can you? You said you have a hard time imagining.
You're like, it's going to benefit the consumer.
Listen, Microsoft wouldn't make a decision that doesn't benefit the consumer at all.
Oh,
right?
Come on. They don't give a shit about the consumer.
Do you think that they would make it an always-on requirement knowing that there's absolutely no benefit to the consumer?
Yes, absolutely. Because look, how much does an iPhone cost to people's perception? It costs $99 or it costs $199
or whatever that is.
But that's not what an iPhone costs. It costs $600 for the base model. But everybody thinks about what it costs at the advertised price, which is the subsidized price. And this next generation, I think that what Microsoft is setting themselves up here to do is to make the big push around a subsidized model and get the marketing message behind the new Xbox, $250 or $300, because they're going to...
I think you're spot on about that. But
if you don't want it, that's fine. We'll sell it to you for $500.
I think that's what consumers do want, because they don't... I think people will make that bargain every time. They will say,
gamers or consumers?
Well,
they're one of the same. Yeah, right?
I disagree. I think that gamers don't necessarily want a model that makes the standalone version more expensive so that the subsidized model is the way to go. But I think that
do you pay for gold? I pay for gold. Why shouldn't I get something for that? You know, why shouldn't I get a discount on... I'm a gamer. I don't give a shit that, you know, I'm going to be paying for that subscription anyway, right?
Yep.
Yes.
So if I get to pay less for the initial cost of buying the box because I'm signing up for 2 years, I've been a live member for what, 6 years now? I'm pretty damn loyal. And it's because I like what I get from that service. But yeah, I'm saying that
I like gold because if I sit around and watch, any of the deal sites, I can find the deals on Amazon for $35 for a year of service. Buy the card for $35, and like that's...
Well, now you're just sort of, you know, making excuses. Let's talk about cell phones, because I upgrade based purely on my... when can my freaking provider give me... when can I re-up my contract cycle? Because I like not paying $600 for a phone. And I will gladly make that 2 year commitment because I'm going to be paying for the fucking service anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's the same bargain proposition. And I think most people will happily do that. And maybe it has a dark side. Maybe you are signing away something, but I think American consumers will happily say, I will pay $300 less for something because I'm going to be paying for that subscription over time.
You will. I mean, and you're right, Garnet, in saying that you can get, you know, those subscriptions discounted at certain times of the year. But Jeff is right in saying the majority of consumers don't really care about that. They're not necessarily bargain shoppers. They'll be like, overall, it's a better deal to do the subscription model than it is to say, well, I'm going to buy the standalone and then I'll just look for the gold box deals on Amazon for my Xbox Live Gold.
And that's what I was meaning,
you know?
And I agree. And that's what I was saying is the differentiation that I was making between gamers and consumers is I think a lot of us who think of ourselves as gamers, like myself, like we watch for that stuff. Like we watch for when we can get a good deal on a game, or we watch for when we can get a good deal on live cards and buy a couple of them and just throw them on our account so that you're like stocked up for the next couple of years because you're like, oh, that's easy. I've got it taken care of. But I think you're right that a consumer, which I'm now just thinking of as the more general statistical idea.
You mean the mom that buys it for her kid, essentially.
Or even just people who play games as part of their entertainment stuff but aren't like...
Like hardcore gamers.
Yeah, they're not like as caught up in gaming as I am. It's fine, whatever, obsessed or whatever.
There's going to be much of a distinction there. But I'm still obsessed with this idea of, is there any functional benefit to having my system always talking to the internet? Because my system is always talking to the internet right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if my system knows that it's always talking to the internet, do I get anything for that? Or is it really just a DRM data mining?
I don't think we'll have a good answer to that for a couple of 3 years, because I think the first answer is that, yeah, it probably is a data mining and demographics mining and watching everything you're doing so we can, if nothing else, Jeff, serve you ads that are the best ads we can serve you and get the most money for them. And maybe in a couple of 3 years, as different programmers and entrepreneurial types see what can be done with it and come up with content ideas, there will be some things that work around it.
They can do that now.
We're tech folks. We should be able to, like, if there was a compelling reason for it to be on all the time, you would think that we'd be able to be like, oh yeah, we should be able to, this will be awesome, we'll do this.
Yeah, but I'm honestly at a loss for that. I have no idea why they would honestly go always on.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're all tech people. Look, we're all people who are walking around with smartphones and play games all the time and do all kinds of stuff.
But your console now is always on, right? And by the way, I love that.
Why do you say my console is always
kind of plugging the show that I do called Always On CNET?
Well, mine, but
my console is not always on.
You unplug yours from the internet when at any point ever?
Well, no. But are you saying that a standby state in the 360 has some sort of exchange of data that's going on in the background? Because I don't think it
does.
Well,
they can mine your data and hold it and wait for when the internet connection kicks up. And
okay.
Upload it then, and they, you know, and they can wait until you put your disc in and try to play online, whatever. I'm saying, here's where I think people can get pissed off. If you live in an area that you can't get high speed internet and you've never connected your console to the internet before, you have every right to be pissed off. That sucks. The idea of this, and again, it's just the idea of this that people are getting pissed off at. I forgot what B is. I had something and I got sidetracked.
Well, here's my thought.
It's a pretty big A, to be fair.
It's a big A, but I think most of the people who are pissed off at this are more pissed off about the concept of DRM and just hate anything that could even be possibly associated with DRM. And I totally agree that Diablo 3 and SimCity are Exhibit A and B for how this is spectacularly fucked right now with today's technology. But, and also I think our Exhibit A and B as to why this is not going to be announced.
Well, it was interesting that a lot of the points you made when you were playing Devil's Advocate were the exact points that Cliff Bleszinski blogged about. Because he made a formal response to the whole Adam Orr thing and the always-on requirement. I mean, he has quite a pedigree in the games industry, and so I thought what he said was really interesting. And he brought up all of the points that you did when you were playing Devil's Advocate, and you know, he was saying, like, you know, why is it such a bad thing to not be always on? Like, what are the downsides to it? And his point was, do you need to be on your Xbox when it can't be connected? Can't you just stop playing when your connection goes down? And I thought that was a really interesting, because people are...
That's such a BS. Like, I'm playing Far Cry 3, having a good time playing single player. My internet connection crashes and I can't keep playing.
Well, the example he used that a lot of people that are screaming on the forums use, well, what if I want to take my Xbox on vacation with me and there's no internet where I'm going?
Boat.
You know?
What if?
Yeah, and he was like, can't you just disconnect and unplug for a while?
What if I don't want to, Cliff? What if I want to fucking go on my fucking vacation and play my damn games? That's my goddamn prerogative. Don't tell me what the fuck to do.
I thought it was an interesting example.
I'm sorry, that is such a bullshit answer. Oh, can't you just unplug for a while? What if I don't want to? I like being plugged in. Don't tell me what to do.
There's so much of this that is just the war of hypotheticals.
Mm. Well, but you know what it is that we don't trust corporations, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we don't trust the idea of being always on because we don't trust the people who would be running the connection.
No, because I disagree. We trust the fuck out of corporations. We trust them so much. Most of the time, we don't even realize how much we trust them because the idea of DRM of somehow we have come to this.
You know about actions and words differences.
Straw man of DRM that somehow will impinge. I guarantee the majority of the people that are, you know, hue and cry about this online, they wouldn't even notice if their Xbox somehow magically turned always on. They wouldn't even notice because they're plugged in all the fucking time anyway.
Right.
And you know what I mean?
But how many sites have they entered their personal data into?
Exactly.
Are they on Facebook?
It reminded me when I used to work in customer service and people would be like, oh, I'm not gonna fax you my credit card number. I'm like, really? But you'll fucking hand it to me in person. There's nothing different. You know what I mean? It is such a perception issue. And again, I'm not defending it because I think I don't even know how I feel about it. That's why I keep bringing up these questions because it is very infuriating to think it. But I also think there's no fucking way they're going to announce that. So
just going back to your big A, I think a lot of people
notice my big A in these pants.
I think a lot of people here wouldn't notice if the Xbox suddenly went always on. But
right.
going back to like a small town like in South Dakota or someplace like that where they don't have that kind of internet.
Hey, we have that in North Dakota.
Or in North Dakota.
Just come to North Dakota instead.
Like, it'd be a big deal if it went always on. So
that's my third favorite Dakota, by the way.
There's only two.
Well, Fanning is my first.
Oh, well, of course. and the other thing to remember is that for a company like Microsoft, and if something like an always on sounds like it's anti-consumer, their responsibility isn't necessarily to the consumer. Their responsibility is to their stockholders. And that's why you can see a situation like Square Enix where the consumers pick up something like Tomb Raider and talk about how much they love it, but they're going to can the developer anyway. Because their responsibility is not to those people that pick it up. Their responsibility is to the people that put money in for stock.
Well, which is why they would be stupid to ignore all of the Dakotas of the world.
Exactly.
You know, they're not going to make that.
But smart to come out with a really smoking hot looking sales tag on their machine, especially going up against PS4. And by the way, it's a subsidized price.
I think you're on this. You're really onto it right there.
The reports have said that there's going to be two models, that there will be a subscription model. The prices that have been thrown out are $300 and $500, but why would it's not confirmed.
I mean, of course they're gonna want to
every show.
I gotta turn my lights on at a certain point. Why would they not? I mean, what any company that watches an Apple keynote and sees them stand there next to a giant screen that says $299 for their phone that doesn't cost $299.
No,
you know what I mean.
Apple.
Why would any company go? Wait a second.
Apple's even better
about
it. Apple does not sell that device for $299.
Right.
They sell it through
AT&T
wireless retailers
and Verizon
for that price. You can go to the Apple store, but if you sign a contract with one of those providers, otherwise you go to the Apple store.
But they get to make hay about the new $299 iPhone 12.
All right, so there you go, folks. Did you enjoy that? There, you got your list. We
didn't ask for it.
You got very excited.
We didn't want to talk about it.
Speculation is fun, isn't it?
We delivered it.
I'm going to get a bunch of shit for that. You know what?
All right.
Okay. Never read the comments.
There you go.
I'll read them for you because I'm addicted.
No, I'm talking about my mom calls me, and she has a long conversation.
All right, we have the last segment yet to come, so stick around. We'll be right back to wrap things up with a fourth segment.
Get your towels ready, it's about to go down. Everybody in the place hit the fucking deck. But stay on your motherfucking toes. We running this, let's go. I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat. Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat. I'm on a boat, I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the motherfucking boat. I'm on a boat, motherfucker, take a look at me. Straight floating on a boat. Busted by night, wind whipping at my coat. You can't stop me, motherfucker, cause I'm on a boat. Picture drink.
Andrea, do your T-Pain.
I can't do it when the music's not going. But I will say, Garnet, it is very windy on the deck. So bring a jacket.
Is that a euphemism? I don't think it's
no.
very windy on the deck.
Because there's a line about the wind on the boat.
Oh, right.
When you're on your
I got my flippy floppies.
When you're on your cruise, bring a jacket because the top level deck is really like it's cold and windy.
You're gonna be flipping burgers while I'm you're the flipping copies.
You know the
straight flipping copies.
Yeah,
basically, Lonely Island. They're the shit.
You know what is hilarious is like, so I was talking to Ariel last week, and I'm like, you know what we'd be doing in a week? And she's like, what? I'm like, we could be on a boat. And she looks at me like, dead air. I'm like, you know, wait,
crickets.
I'm like, I'm on a boat. And she's like, what? I'm like, oh, that's right. You were in Japan then. Hold on. It was a meme that while you were gone was on, and I showed up like all excited to show her.
She completely awesome. Missed that?
Yeah. And so I go and we sit down.
In Japan, everybody's on a boat, so it's not a big deal.
Like, got the MacBook open. I'm like turning it up. I put it on, and she's looking at it like this.
Oh, no.
I'm like, had to be there. It was 2004. Like, oh, we were all young and innocent.
I'm like, I'm on a boat. It's even. I bought my flippy floppies. Yeah, and then she just looked at me like, you are nuts.
She's on a lonely island.
Oh,
nicely done.
Zing.
Well done. And then, so we never even made it to, I'm the boss. Mm. So, anyway. Stuff that happens.
Indeed.
So, Luigi's Mansion?
Luigi's Mansion. I just started actually picking it up yesterday, and I haven't gotten too far into it. I'm about maybe an hour or so in, and it's everything that we remember about the GameCube version. So much fun. And I don't know. Like, am I the only one that actually kind of likes a Luigi game better than a Mario game? Just because of...
It's kind of heresy, but this game is excellent. I will give you that.
It's kind of heresy. I agree.
No, Oz, are you sure you want to say you like a Luigi game better than a Mario game just as a blanket?
Well, okay, maybe not so much as a blanket, but...
Better
it just
than a Mario
like
tennis game.
Yes!
It just feels like whenever Luigi gets like his own starring role, he shows so much more personality. Like in Luigi,
oh yeah, that's the best part of that game is his little comments and like singing to himself.
He doesn't want to be there. Like he's always just like whenever professor's just like telling him, he's like, oh, you gotta go and go. You can just see him going like shaking his head, no, like don't send me in there. And it's the same way in like the Mario and Luigi RPGs. Like he's always the one that's always the comedy relief, having like everything's at his expense. And for the most part, that's why I kind of lost my train of thought there.
It happened to me earlier.
They made him an endearing.
You're B.
I mean, look, they made Luigi an endearing character. They kind of needed to. Like Mario, although he is sort of the comic plumber, is definitely the front guy, right? He's the star. He's always the big guy. So they like Luigi is like this cool, endearing, fun brother. And that's a great role to be in, right? The pressure's off of him in the first place, and then they really embrace that. And I think you're right. Like Luigi's Mansion, at least I remember it, like same thing. Like he had that.
Yeah, he's got so much personality. And I mean, the first moment where you're listening to the theme song, and then Luigi like starts humming it too. Like he's like hanging out with you, playing. You know, he's exploring the house. He doesn't want bad things to happen.
Yeah, they get the lightheartedness. It's cool.
It's great.
And even though he's just like walks around. He's obviously scared of the surroundings. Anytime he gets a call, he's just like, oh. He's just like, yeah. Just calmly,
hello?
Hello?
Yeah. What do you think of the 3D? Are you playing it with the 3D jacked up?
I actually have not played it with the 3D just because the 3D tends to give me a bit of a headache after a while.
I like the 3D. But...
Which is probably the big problem with the 3DS in a nutshell, aside from the general lack of games. And that's probably why I'm really happy that Luigi's Mansion happened when it did, is because there's so little to play on the 3DS right now. And maybe you'll see like maybe four or five titles a year. And I'm a big handheld gamer, and that's kind of disappointing.
They announced a Power Rangers game today, guys.
Power Rangers are huge again, dude. My nephews love the crap out of Power Rangers. They're back in a big way.
They're about to have their 20th anniversary episode last night.
No way.
Which, yeah.
That makes me feel so old.
In related news, I'm old. I remember being in Japan, and going to Tokyo Disneyland. I was an exchange student in Japan. And I went to Tokyo Disneyland, and there's these crazy dudes dressed up in weird like body suits doing karate moves. And I was like, this is ridiculous. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Cut to 3 months later, it hits in America, and it's like Power Rangers. And I was like, this is the stuff I was laughing at in Japan.
And now you'd love it.
And you know, I never really got into it, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hoping Luigi's Mansion starts like a big bounce back year for the 3DS because I also haven't picked up Fire Emblem, but I also heard that's a
dude
great
Fire
game.
Emblem has gotten so much run in its community, like the love for Fire Emblem has been strong. Right. Definitely strong. Are you into the strategy tactical side?
I actually have not been, but I've been looking to pick it up.
So it's probably a good... I don't know if that would be the best... Well, those are games that wouldn't really fall completely under impenetrable, but they are ones that require, like...
They're not even close to impenetrable.
You know what I mean? Like just where they're, like, completely standoffish. But you definitely, like... Right. You have to go in with a little bit of commitment of, I'm going to learn, I'm going to get into it. But they're very rewarding. Like, obviously, people, like... I'm super stoked for the support for Fire Emblem. It's not my jam, but I think it's pretty cool that they did such a good job with it, and it got such great support.
It has, like, the learning curve of a Monster Hunter, that type of thing.
No, not even. No.
Okay.
No, it's very straightforward.
I will take Jeff's word for it on this one.
Yeah, it's not...
Did you Fire Emblem?
Yeah. I mean, it's... I guess if you've never played a turn-based strategy game, you would... But if you've ever played checkers, well, I mean, it's okay. Not, you know, it's pretty simple.
Play some old Final Fantasies. So.
Yeah.
Then you'll be at home then. I thought you were.
You move your guys around.
Oh, no, I'm not flying in completely. And...
Oh, yeah, if you're not flying in completely, yeah, it's straightforward stuff then.
Right. And in between Animal Crossing coming out in June, Mario and Luigi this summer, Pokemon in the fall, I think it's going to be a really big year for the 3DS, and I'm hoping Luigi's Mansion is the start of it.
That's cool. I'm curious to see how. I didn't realize you'd only played like a first hour of it, so I want to see how you are after you played more of it.
Right.
I've been playing another game that has a lot of history behind it, the Company of Heroes 2 beta. I know we don't talk a lot about strategy games, and I love my strategy games.
I love my Company of Heroes.
Do you really? Yeah. So what did you like about Company of Heroes?
That it sort of broke down the whole mold of what an RTS was, like no resource management. I'm just really focusing on my tactics and...
Well, there still was resource management. You had to capture the control points, get the command points, get the fuel and ammo points.
No, I agree. I mean, yes, but I mean, not like I'm not mining things. I'm not... You know what I mean? It was more...
You never really had to overthink it or anything.
It was much more...
I think it required a lot of thought.
It was a lot of thought, but it was...
I will tell you this. Like,
tactics more. And same thing with Dawn of War. Those two games, I think,
were necessarily
similar time frame, right?
Well, so
I've lumped
both
them
from
together
Relic,
in my mind.
Those are all Relic games, yes. Mm-hmm. And so Relic did the Company of Heroes line with the two expansions, and then they went into the Dawn of War games. Mm-hmm. And they changed the formula some in Dawn of War, partially significantly around the commander units. And
right.
So, look, if you've been playing... So, first of all, I've been playing the beta. There's a stress beta that's out right now, and it's pretty well featured. It's multiplayer. It also lets you play against the computer. And I played it a good bit, and look, if you've been following the community, you've probably heard a lot of this. So, if you've been following the community, I don't have any new insights that everybody hasn't said, because I think basically all the stuff the community has been hot on is true, and it gives me a little concern. The speed of the game has... And by this, I don't just mean the speed of how you have to play the game, but the speed of progression in the game has definitely been dialed up from what I remember it being in Company of Heroes. It's much more Dawn of War-like. It's very quickly... You get through the early game really quick. It's a very fast race to the end game. Hmm. The mid game seems really empty. So, you know, right off the bat, it's very quickly get out there, secure some points, get your engine... And it's also, like, so far... And maybe this is just... Maybe it's a combination of the balancing not being finished yet and enough games haven't been played yet to really reveal some of the nuanced tactics with other players. But so far, what I'm seeing a ton of and what I'm doing is cranking out engineers, getting them their flamethrower upgrade, getting an anti-tank gun to control whatever sort of anti-tank stuff gets on in the mid-game, getting mortar guys out because the mortar guys are just devastating, and then just pushing. And then you can get to the end game, but tanks are really weird. Tanks are the anti-tank guns in this game are super powerful. Hmm. And so far, they've been really, really dangerous and deadly. And
the scenario's cool and inventive, and
so it's not. It doesn't have single player to it. So this is just a multiplayer test, right? Okay. So I played some 1v1 comp stop. I played some 2-on-2 co-op against comp. I played 3-on-3 all players, and just the flow of it is just, so far it just seems off. It seems, you know, maybe part of it also is going to the Russian front. You would think the Russian front would be, I don't know, like, you think about it being awful and cold and slow. And they do some really cool things. Like, one of the really cool things they do in the game is they brought in the idea of blizzards. So when you're in snow maps, you'll like hear a blizzard coming, and then your guys even say like, there's a blizzard coming, and if you're caught out in the open during the blizzard, your troops will freeze to death. So that's kind of cool, and there are and your engineers can build fire pits, and so there's different ways to like you can like secure your guys into a building, or you can secure them into a half track. Vehicles, of course, are okay, or you can get your guys around a fire pit and keep them warm. So that really changes the complexion of battle, because you can be right in the middle of a big fight, and then a blizzard blows in, and suddenly it really changes your situation. You're like, oh shit, I got to like get my guys holed up, or I've got to fall back, or I want to really press and try and get those buildings. But right now the balance equations just don't seem to be working out that well for like when I've been playing it. It seems very rush heavy. Seems very and by rush heavy I mean not in the old school like build a bunch of things and shove them into somebody. You know, it's not like Command and Conquer rush heavy. It's more like run out and get stuff really fast. Bang out your engineers and your mortar squads, and just I'm not seeing that sort of. I remember watching Sean Elliott play this game. I probably told this before. Like watching Sean Elliott play Company of Heroes was one of the coolest moments of watching someone play a game ever, because he was so skilled at playing that game. And it was amazing to watch him micromanage his troops in the field and be able to strike out. It felt like you were watching a real tactical military battle. He would have victories and then like try to consolidate, but then maybe he'd get burned and he'd like pull back and be able to reconsolidate his forces and come back around a flank. And there was all that sort of, you know, give and take back and forth. And I haven't encountered enough of that in this game. So far, it's been very much a matter of getting the right guys in the field at the right place at the right time really quickly and outspeeding your opponent and out-resourcing them. And, you know, as the middle thing in your stat shows, is the middle stat in the final end of summary is resource float. And resource float just refers to, like, how much free resources that you have. Because you have free resources, that means you didn't build shit with it. And, like, it's really managing your resource float and making sure that's not getting too high so that you're, like, constantly producing enough to be throwing it at your enemy. And the computer, even on normal on this game, the computer is ruthless. On normal, the computer is pretty ruthless. Like, it will, if it's playing the Germans, it will have grabbed victory points and have half tracks in your base really quickly. You have to be really, it's good as a trainer, because it means you got to be up on your shit to get there. I hope they train it up. I hope they are able to do some more balancing. I hope they're listening to the community. I think that there's a couple of times that I've had really cool Company of Hero moments. In our 3v3, I was trying to hold the left flank, and one of the enemies that was attacking us had gotten together a pretty good attack on that side, and I didn't have enough troops to hold him, especially because he brought up a tank, and he started to push the attack as a blizzard came in. And one of the things they also are modeling in the game is frozen surfaces. So there's land, and then there's also like frozen water surfaces. And I don't know whether he was paying attention and managing it or not, but he took a frontal assault approach on the command point I was holding, and that took his tank right across a frozen body of water. And I mortar barraged, which blew out the ice underneath his tank, which I could not have destroyed otherwise, cool. And sank his tank along with the machine gun crew that was running along behind him, which bogged them down. And then I was able to like push him back, because then the blizzard hit. And now instead of being able to come over and take the spot that I had, he was stuck out in no man's land. And my guys were standing around the fire pit, like just sitting there bombing him.
It's cool.
That's really cool.
And so that was really cool. But that's like out of playing 7 or 8 games, that's like the standout moment to me so far. The rest of it have been pretty like standard, like, oh, my tank gun's in the right spot and I was able to blow up a bunch of tanks, or my engineers who got flamethrowers roasted 1,000,001. The engineers with flamethrowers are really ridiculously dangerous.
How far out is this game?
Like next month. Oh. It's done.
I think it's coming out at the end of June, right? Like June 28th?
I thought it was May.
No, I
all right, remember. So it's 2 months away.
Yeah.
This is a stress test beta, though.
Yeah,
so this is a server stress test beta. And there's places out there that are giving away keys. I'm sure that, you know, at some point in time, hopefully we'll be able to get some keys. It's still really well done. I hope that they're listening to the balancing changes that they could do, because I want to get back to that. I feel like it's too fast. I feel like there was tactical pieces of Company of Heroes that were maybe put by the wayside a little bit in Dawn of War. And Dawn of War was Warhammer, and it just felt different, and that was cool. But I want, like, on the Russian front, I want to get back to a little bit different pace. Mm. You know, it's like I think about this, like, there's got to be a way to make more. The whole idea behind Relic's revolutionizing real-time strategy was to get the idea back to, like, you playing the general over right. over the like tactics board,
yeah, not
pushing.
Base building, but actually right. having a battle.
Doesn't it seem like there ought to be another way to like revolutionize that series, that genre again? Like something that could take it another step further. I'm not sure what it is. Ruse was pretty cool. Ruse did a really good job.
That came and went, and I remember being wowed by that when
Ruse was really
came
good.
Out, and I never even played it, and I don't remember it even making a real stir in the sort of RTS community.
It didn't.
It's
I don't
too
know
bad
why. It didn't
because
get marketed well or something.
I loved the sense of scale, and it seemed really ambitious. But.
And it had this same thing where you had that sense of cool tactics and playing, because the tactics of it are really fun. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I like the base building thing, too. But if you're going to do bases, like, here's the thing to me. If you're going to do bases and you're going to do, especially you're going to do this, like, fast approach to real-time strategies, and I think part of it might be that they want to get game length down, people are going to play StarCraft 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the jam. The jam is going to be StarCraft 2. So I think
don't compete on that level, like, go a different direction is what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, and they're not competing on that level because they're not a base-building game and they don't have those same pieces, but embrace the things that makes your game cool. Like, is there a reason that I am able to level up? So there's cool parts of progression in the game where you're getting command points and opening new skills. You choose a commander. Commanders have different skills. There are things that you can add to your troops based off of that to improve them, like the flamethrowers I'm talking about. Do I need to be able to get all of those things within the first 3 or 4 minutes? I don't think so. I think that if you like slow down that progression curve, give me a reason to be building just a regular conscript squad and using them in the field and not thinking about what I'm going to upgrade them to or where they're going. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like right now it's like the whole curve of how fast things level up and how fast you can get through stuff is so quick, which gets you through the game faster and does it gets you with big pieces on the field, you know, blowing shit up faster, but I think it's to the detriment of the tactical piece of the game.
How many maps are in the beta?
I want to say 7 or 8. There's plenty of maps.
Do you think they're going to come up with any bigger ones, try and kind of control
the pace? They have some big maps. And that, like, I played on the 3x3, in the 3-on-3. It was plenty big.
And that doesn't like help the pace at all? It just still feels a little too fast?
So it helped the pace in that the game lasted longer, but it didn't help the... What I'm talking about is more a tempo thing. We still got through all of that early stuff so fast that the last 10 minutes, like though the game lasted 10 minutes longer, the last 10 minutes of the game was still us playing with all of that high-level stuff. We weren't getting to anything new anymore. There wasn't any more one more thing I need to get to because we had already explored, we'd already done the tech trees.
You already have everything within a few minutes.
We had teched up and we had all the pieces we needed, and it was more a matter of picking which pieces we were going to use out of the toolbox instead of trying to figure out which piece of the toolbox to get next. Mm. And I think that like, there was some sort of cool piece to the tactics of also having to, I mean, I guess maybe a pure tactics person would argue that that's better, right? Because actually figuring out which things you're going to use is strategy, and then playing with it in the field is tactics. But I don't know. It's my opinion.
Anything in way of new units or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of new units. I mean, so if you're interested in that sort of stuff, the Soviets... They don't have field medics that can go around with the troops, but they do have a power that you can apply at your base that has like these really cool old Russian ladies who stand around the base.
Nice.
And you like bring your troops back and they're like the Russian nurses and they'll heal your troops.
And then they like get into a slightly larger version of themselves.
Yes, it's like
and then
they're
get
nesting,
into a slightly
nesting dolls. Nesting dolls. The conscripts are really cool. So the conscripts are your base military foot soldier. But what's cool about them is they can be used as a sort of healing system in the field, because think of them as conscripts. So they're like, think about, you know, the Russians are out like just pulling peasants in and saying, okay, you're fighting for us now. And once you've put together a conscript squad, when they're out in the field, you can use them to heal up or reinforce any of your damaged units. So let's say you got a machine gun squad. It loses a couple of members. Now you're down to just one member of a machine gun squad. You can pull a conscript squad up to that, tell them to fortify, and then those guys will peel off and heal up your machine gun squad. So you can use the conscript squads to heal up your more powerful and more important squads. So that's cool. Yeah.
So it's just the pacing then. And so that just means that people are going to roll up on my base faster, because that was one of the things about the last Company of Heroes is that, you know, I used to build up my units and like, okay, I'm almost ready to build. Oh my God, there's already a tank at my base.
Yeah, you can't do that. Well, you shouldn't be able to do that in Company of Heroes anyway. I mean, Company of Heroes, the cool thing about the capture the points in the field system was that it stopped, you know, it you can't turtle in the game. Turtling is just sitting back in your base. Like, you have to go out and get control points in order to build the juice that's going to run your army.
I was a total RTS newbie at that time.
So. Oh, man.
That was a trial by fire.
Well, I think if you get in the beta, play some one-on-one versus the computer, and then, and this is like any other good real-time strategy, once you finish the game, play back the replay, turn off the fog of war, and go look what the enemy does. Because it'll give you like a good idea, like, oh, what did they build? Where did they go? How did they get there that fast? And the computer is it's more fun to play people because they, on the most point part, will not be as ruthlessly efficient. The computer is ruthlessly efficient.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Well, are you going to talk about this Batman announcement?
Well, they announced Batman Arkham Origins this week. Warner Brothers announced that it's coming in on October 25th.
Wait, another prequel?
Yeah.
Prequel.
That's the thing. Yes. That's 2013 in a nutshell for you. If it's not a prequel, it's a reboot. So
Can't wait for preak boots.
Exactly. It's not going to be from Rocksteady this time around. This time it's going to be WB Montreal, and they're the people responsible for the Wii U port of Arkham City. And,
They're supposed to have all of the original assets from Rocksteady to maintain the look and feel of the world.
Come on, Rocksteady's
going to
support them on the game.
They came out and publicly made a statement saying that they're
using the engine.
They're backing them, yeah.
Yeah, they're using the engine. This is not, it's not like they're in a vacuum.
It's going to be like a Call of Duty situation where Infinity Ward steps aside for like about a year or two and they give Treyarch the reins and they give them everything they possibly need.
Because don't we all presume that Rocksteady's making a next-gen Batman?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, right. Exactly.
They're making a next-gen something.
Well, they left a lot of loose ends in Arkham City and a lot of Easter eggs and things like that.
Are you a comic book guy, Oz?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so what do you think about the whole like Silver Age angle and the young Bruce Wayne part of this?
I think one of the things that I've gotten sick of the most from comics is this idea of looking backwards, of looking at origins. They've kind of played that whole thing out. DC Comics even had a whole new thing with the New 52 where the whole thing is, start all over. See how everyone just started. There's going to be a Batman arc in the summer where it's Batman Zero Year, where it's not quite year one, but we're still looking at that era. And really, I just kind of want these stories to kind of move forward. But I guess with Rocksteady not there, there's really nothing they can do about that. The Silver Age kind of intrigues me just a little bit, just to kind of see how Batman started with the Penguin and with the Black Mask is another new character that's really intriguing to look at, just because he's that kind of mob boss. He's kind of a more badass mob boss than anything you've seen in like Batman Begins or anything like that. But
he's like pre-Lex.
He's something like that. And I thought it was really interesting that they threw in Deathstroke of all people, because he's never really been affiliated with Batman. He's actually been more affiliated with other parts of the DC universe. And I guess the reason they went with that is they kind of want to look at the other side of the kind of anti-Batman, which is what the Game Informer article said, in that he's a hired gun. He's a mercenary for hire. He obviously kills people, and Batman's got more of a code of honor. And Deathstroke has his own code of honor, but he's also just kind of there for whoever can afford him the most.
So what do you guys think? Hype meter on Rocksteady-engined prequel Batman from Montreal?
I would need to see something.
I'm ready to play it.
Oh yeah, no, I'll play it for sure. Like, there's no doubt that I'll play this game. But I agree
you
that
you guys
are
like Mikey. You'll like anything.
Well, no, it's not that. I mean, all those ingredients sound fun. I don't have anything. The problem is in October, I'm going to be all jazzed about new consoles, and
yeah.
So you know, it's going to be in that weird period of like, well, it's
awesome.
Next gen's going out with a bang. I mean,
between
Batman, GTA 5, Beyond Two Souls, there's a lot that's going to come in like September, October. Oh, Assassin's Creed 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's going to come right before next gen, and I hope none of it gets lost in all the next gen hype.
I think it's going to be one of the strongest launch lineups of a console generation ever.
The launch lineup.
I think launch window games.
So you think
we'll have
a strong close to this generation and simultaneously a strong launch? Interesting.
I do.
Okay.
I do, and I think that's mostly because we're getting PCs. We're getting PCs that.
That's what I mean, sitting dude. Here. You're getting a Dell,
dude.
You're getting a dub.
That's, that's what I've heard about the PS4, is that it's comparable to a PC.
So. Yeah, the Xbox is going to be the same way. They're going to be really souped up PCs that everybody knows already how to program for.
Oh, I love the, and by the way, before we do finishing moves, I love the latest rumor that the next Xbox will not be backward compatible, but there'll be an add-on device that you plug into the back of it that'll let you play.
Because Microsoft's always been successful.
And I immediately thought, the HD DVD, yeah. Of course it'll be awesome.
What could possibly go wrong?
I mean, the point was already made that how often do you play a game from a previous console that you would need to play on your new console? It's rare.
But we
never had like a generation where there's been so much add-on content like DLC. Like, I know that we're going to move into the next generation. There's not going to be a lot to go back on, but I kind of want to keep my Rock Band around and be able to access all that stuff. I've poured hundreds of dollars into that, and I'm going to want to access it at some point.
Especially since now with the losing licenses, you know, we saw that Metallica songs were pulled this week because they didn't get the licenses renewed yet. That might not be material you could actually get back.
Right.
All right, let's do finishing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Hey, all right, now, if you thought the idea of a device that you plug into the back of a new generation console to play 360 games was preposterous, how about this? Right now, yes, on Friday, April the
12th,
there are evidently people in Vancouver at a EA Sports facility playing a prototype of, quote, a new NBA concept by EA Sports. Yes, that's right, folks. Being burned by... Elite 11 canned, Live 13 canned, Live 14, God only knows like what's going on there. They are fearless. They are charging ahead to make a new NBA concept. It might actually be Live. Who knows what the hell they're doing? Why? Anyway.
Whatever happened to that dribbling game? Connect dribbling game. What was
it
that
came
called?
Out.
NBA Baller Beats. That actually wasn't bad.
I heard it was
really fun, yeah.
It actually was not terrible, contrary to everything I thought going into it.
Huh. So that's that. I really have nothing more to say about it other than I saw that story. I was like, really? Oh my God. Like, that's just a joke that writes itself. And then I want to give a quick plug for Blendo Games. So that you have to, like, if you're listening to this more than a week out, I'm sorry. It has already ended and it's missed. But Blendo Games, with our friend Brendan Chung, who was on the show earlier this year, has the Humble Bundle weekly sale this week. That means that for a minimum of a dollar, but come on, you could do better than a dollar for him, you will get Atom Zombie Smasher, which is freaking amazing and I love it, Flotilla, which is cool, and another game he made called Air Forte that I actually don't know anything about it, but apparently it's like an educational thing, and that's cool. So those would be the three you get, and of course, in the Humble way, if you pay over the minimum, over the average price, which is running right now about $3.75, you will also get 30 Flights of Loving. So that's over on the Humble Bundle page. It's a big Blendo game sale, and if you don't have those already, God, Atom Zombie Smasher, I still adore. So it's an unsolicited and plug for our friend of the show, Brendan, and we should have Brendan back on. That was an awesome show.
Great.
Actually, it was on in the car the other day because Ariel listens to the show, and I was like, that was a pretty good show.
Wait a minute, she listens to the show, but she's like a month behind or what?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. She's like, what did you say a month ago?
She's going to love last week's episode.
How about your finishing move, Jeff?
Mine is a bit of a tease. Double Jump is a show that Christian Spicer and I have done, and I will tell you that there is a very big, big announcement coming, Double Jump. And if you are in the LA area at the end of May, you're going to be a very happy person. So, if you dig that show, I hope you do. So stay tuned, get excited. It's super exciting.
Free beer?
Es posible.
Oh.
I'm there.
Never mind.
How did you decipher
awesome.
I was speaking in a different language so you wouldn't know what I was saying.
Ozzy, how about you, sir?
All right. Well, Evo 2013 is coming up in July, and passes are already on sale. I went ahead and actually purchased mine for $40. Gets you into the spectating area for the tournaments for all 3 days. And if you've never actually seen one of these live, I mean, they're always on Twitch. So much fun to watch on the stream. But there really is nothing like being there in person. Like, a couple months ago, they had the SoCal Regionals down here over at UC Irvine. And honestly, you get caught up in the atmosphere of actually watching those battles live.
What games do you watch?
Super Street Fighter 4 and Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which they typically save for last, just because it gets the entire crowd's hyped. And honestly, I lost my voice coming back to the office on Monday, the next day. So if you're into that sort of thing, and if you're in the Las Vegas area or happen to be taking a Vegas trip that weekend.
Or just take a Vegas trip to go to Evo.
Exactly. Just jump on Shoryuken and get a couple of passes.
Far out. Andrew, you get to bring her home for us.
Yes. Well, I have to do a shameless plug because I do have my new show, which we mentioned. I am now working on 3 different channels on YouTube. So my primary is The Escapist, which I would really love if you guys could go subscribe to The Escapist YouTube channel. I'm also working on Smosh Games, and we are about to hit our 2 million subscriber mark in just over 6 months, which is crazy growth. So I'm really proud of those guys and just want to give them a shout out. And I'm also working on my alma mater, Clever Games. So very excited to be back working with all 3 of those properties. So would really appreciate any love and support you guys could show those channels. And I want to give a big thank you to Funimation for sending me this awesome Blu-ray of Mass Effect Paragon Lost. I know you said you mentioned it on the show last week. I just wanted to say a thank you personally, and I'm looking forward to going home and watching it.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening again, as always. Thanks to the fine folks here at Atlantis Group Studios. That came here, by the way. Somehow they figured out
addressed
that we were here.
To you.
It was kind of amazing.
That's really awesome.
With a love note and like chocolates. And no, I didn't come with
chocolates. Yeah, the note that you like... Whatever.
I didn't keep the note. I'm sorry. Why you make me look bad like that? Oh, my God. Anyway, thanks very much. Next week, I'm gone. So you guys are on your own. Have fun.
On a boat.
As you heard, on a boat. I will be back and recharged and re-energized to head into the festival of fun that we will call the E3 run-up. It's going to be intense.
Man,
it's going to be incredible.
Jesus.
It will be here already. Before you know it, E3 will be here. So... buckle up, folks.
I'm ready. I got my confirmation already.
Me too.
Me too.
All right, everybody, that is it. That is your weekend confirmed. Until next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.